Dr. Richard Marino.
This is the meeting of the American Chiropractic Examiners.
And we're going to start with the roll call.
Okay. Dr. Marino?
Present.
Dr. Bennett?
Present.
Mr. Knopf? Dr. Knopf, I'm sorry.
Present.
Mr. Stevenson.
Present.
Sorry. Can you make sure that you're muted on your computer?
I am.
Speakers up.
And Ms. Powell.
Present.
Nayuri.
Okay.
It appears that Dr. Bennett's computer is not muted from what we're seeing.
Thank you, Shaver.
Okay, I'm looking.
Turn your speakers all the way down and then turn your microphone.
Oh, there he is. He's muted now.
Yeah, I thought I was.
Okay. Okay.
Cool. Thank you.
And then, Deputy Director, you want to introduce yourself, please?
Oh, Alyssa Vanderveen, Deputy Director.
Okay. Dominic.
Ryan Dominic, Licensing Manager.
Okay, and then we have Mr. Monahan joining us by Zoom also. With the
President here.
Thank you, sir. Okay. And do we want to introduce our court reporter?
I'm Dorothy Schulte.
Thank you.
Okay. I want to recognize any new licensees in the first year that you're licensed. You're required to attend a meeting like this. I think you'll find it informative, and you'll learn how the board works and the process, and maybe some things that will keep you out of trouble as well. That being said, we're going to go to our first tab number one, which is a formal interview in the matter of Dr. Robert Doty. This is the time and place for formal interview in the matter of Dr. Robert Doty. Case number 2018-021, 2018-022, 2018-030, 2018-040, and 2018-045. This matter will be heard by the board pursuant to the authority given to it by ARS 32-924F. Dr. Doty, I see that you're here with your counsel. Will you please introduce yourselves for the record?
Yes. Good morning. Attorney Mandy Carvis of Wicker Smith appearing with and on behalf of my client, Dr. Doty.
Dr. Robert Aaron Doty. Thank you.
Hi, welcome. Dr. Doty, you have received a letter informing you of the matters to be discussed today and the possible actions the board may take at this formal interview. Those options include dismissal, issuing a non-disciplinary advisory letter, issuing a disciplinary letter of concern, censure, restitution, placing your license on probation, assessing a civil penalty, or referring this matter to a formal hearing. The purpose of this formal interview is to inquire into the facts and circumstances of this case. Board members have read the materials. If you have any additional materials you would like to present to the board, please do so now.
I do have some additional items that I think are already part of the record, but just since there is a great volume of material, should I give them to you, Jackie, or?
Yes, please.
Okay.
During the course of the interview, if it is necessary to refer to a patient, please use initials only. This proceeding is being recorded by our court reporter. As a result, it is important that everyone speaks loudly and clearly and that only one person speaks at a time. I'm going to ask the board members and staff to introduce themselves for the record, and we can start over here with
Alyssa Vanderveen, Deputy Director.
Ryan Dominic, Licensing Manager.
Angela Powell, Public Member.
Dr. Wayne Bennett, Vice Chair.
I'm Dr. Richard Guarino, Chairman.
I'm Dr. Mark Lanayiri. I'm the Executive Director.
Dr. Stephen Knopf, Professional Member.
Mitch Turbinson, Public Member.
Okay, thank you. This proceeding, at this point, I want to have everybody sworn in by our court reporter.
Could you please raise your right hand? Do you solemnly swear to tell the truth, the whole truth, nothing but the truth, so help you God?
I do.
Thank you.
And Ms. Schultz, you might want to adjust your mic. Can't hear you over the speaker.
Point it towards you.
Thank you.
Okay, we're going to begin by having our board's executive director give a brief summary of the allegations in this case, and then you'll be given an opportunity to respond. Dr. Nayiri, please give us a brief summary.
Thank you. In the matter of Dr. Robert Aaron Doty, allegations are improper billing, impersonating another practitioner, unprofessional conduct, failing to respond to board subpoena, and failing to maintain records.
Okay. Dr. Doty, what is your response to the allegations?
Yes, good morning. I'd like to make a brief statement on behalf of Dr. Doty. You should have materials and you may need to share with one another with respect to the issues. I thought it would be easier to have some of the primary things before you. Dr. Doty and I both had the opportunity to listen to the interview that was conducted last month's meeting of his ex-wife, Dr. DeWolf. So we are aware of the concerns and issues that the board has addressed, so we want to try and focus on some of those things. First and foremost, with respect to who was or was not in charge or owned the business in 2018 and was responsible for maintaining the records of the patients of that business, one of the things that we've provided to the board this morning is a copy of an address change form that Dr. Doty provided to the board on October 24th of 2017, which was prior to these issues. He indicated that he had a new practice address and that the custodian of the patient records was going to stay at AZ Body Mechanics, his former practice, which was in fact still maintained and owned by Dr. DeWolf. So she in fact was the one who was responsible and the custodian of the records, which is why Dr. Doty himself did not have access to the records in 2018 after the complaints were filed. So any missing records for any of these patients would have been in the possession of Dr. DeWolf. Additionally, as Dr. DeWolf indicated, when she took over the business, she undertook collection efforts for patients who she deemed to have outstanding accounts, not considering the fact that Dr. Doty had already entered into an agreement with those patients that he would accept whatever their insurance paid and would not attempt to collect beyond that. Unfortunately, when Dr. DeWolf took over, she saw accounts owing and undertook efforts to collect on those accounts. She did discuss turning those people over to collections. She indicated that that did not occur. We don't know for sure if that actually occurred or not. So several patients filed a complaint with this board and also the Attorney General's office. Once Dr. Doty was informed of his ex-wife's collection efforts, he did reach out to those patients, let them know that it was not him that was doing it, that he would speak with her and try to stop any such efforts. With the other materials that we have provided to you today, our retraction letters from several of those patients indicating that it was not Dr. Doty that they intended to file a complaint about or against because he had honored their agreement. So we provided a retraction letter from DP, from SO, KS, TC. Those are all part of the materials that you received this morning. So again, Dr. Doty is not the one who attempted to improperly collect against these patients. They've all indicated in writing that they understood that. nothing has come of the Attorney General's investigation since back in 2018, 2019, the same kind of time frame when we provided all of the same information to the board. It's unfortunate, obviously, that his ex-wife attempted to collect these accounts. Again, that was not his doing. The patients all understand that he was not the one that did that, and we believe that that has since been rectified. He's happy to answer any questions that anyone may have. And lastly, since there was a question in the board brief with respect to whether or not his 2015 continuing education hours were proper or credited, we have provided another copy of his certificate from Grayson for 12 hours conducted November 7th and 8th on 2015, and it includes the continuing education statement of credit and program and provider information. So that should satisfy the issues with respect to any questions about 2015. Again, what happened to these patients is unfortunate. Dr. Doty himself was upset by that and did whatever he could to rectify the situation and the actions that were taken by his ex-wife. I see that the board has offered Dr. DeWolf some sort of consent. I know there was discussing about her potentially surrendering her license. But again, the issues with respect to the improper collections were not actions that were taken by Dr. Doty. It was his intent to honor his agreement with those patients to only accept whatever their insurance paid and any co-pays that they had agreed to. Again, he's here today and happy to answer any questions that you may have, but we appreciate the time to address you and be heard on these issues.
Okay, thank you very much for your opening statement. So, you know, I've got some questions that, and this is Dr. Richard Guarino for the recorded record. We heard testimony from Dr. DeWolf that said the divorce agreement was supposed to be a transfer of ownership at some point that was never signed. And she stated in her testimony that Dr. Doty does in fact have access to patient records, which we subpoenaed, and that he would have to pay some type of a fee to get into the system to make it happen. When we heard his past testimony, he said that he was kind of locked out and didn't have access to it. And I take that very seriously because when we subpoena information, of course, it helps us get to the bottom of what we're looking for to determine the truth and where it lies. And we still don't have patient records. So how do you respond to that?
Go ahead. Well, obviously this happened 2 years ago now. So in regards to the patient records, the physical records were no longer in my possession. When I left the practice in October 2017, I was done. I had moved on. In regards to having access to the electronic versions, I was no longer allowed. It was essentially, I was blocked out. It was an online EHR system. I can't remember the name of the company that we used at the time. Veracle, I believe it was. Again, I was do everything I could to get everything to you. But at the time when I left, I, again, even with this form, when I moved on, I said, okay, well, I explained when I moved on from that practice to my new practice that she could have all the records.
So do you have any kind of written agreement that's signed that demonstrates that you transferred ownership of the practice? You went from a co-owner to saying now she's in charge, and that's your testimony. Do you have a written document that tells us that that's the case that backs up your testimony today? How do we know that you don't have access to those records? How do we know that you can't get into a system? We don't know if it was an online cloud type of data bank or was it a hard drive? We still don't have those answers.
Well, from what I remember, it was all online, so it would have been, I guess, a cloud account. When I left that business, when we were actually, Dr. DeWolf and I attempted to do a mediation for the business to see who would have the assets. We had, when we went through the process, we had drawn it up, but was it signed off? No. And that's pretty much where it stood. I essentially left in good faith, giving her access to the practice so that things could continue on, because I decided to move on. That our relationship had dissolved, and I thought it was in the best interest for myself. My family have two young daughters at the time that I had to move forward. So I gave Dr. DeWolf the practice, and I moved on.
Okay, so when you do that, this board is charged with, you know, protecting the public. If we subpoena records and we don't get them, and we determine at some point that somebody is unregulatable because they're not giving us the information we need to make a good decision, eventually those people lose their licenses. So this is a big deal. And so when you say that you went through a divorce and a split and there was some kind of verbal agreement and you walked away, you put yourself in a very bad situation by not being able to provide records on patients that you treated for all of these billing claims that we can't even look at the records to match up the billing disputes over. Ms. Carvis.
Yes. I mean, ultimately, obviously, Dr. Doty and Dr. DeWolf did finalize their divorce. Presumably, there is some documentation in that regard that we could provide. Again, Dr. Doty did follow the board's regulations and requirements in terms of notifying this board that he had left Arizona Body Mechanics and was no longer the custodian of those records, and that in fact it was the transferred, he indicated on his transfer form that he transferred custody of the patient records to AZ Body Mechanics. I understand that you have Dr. DeWolf telling you one thing and Dr. Doty telling you something else, but we do have a document that was provided to this board prior to any of these issues arising, indicating that AZ Body Mechanics, that he was no longer with AZ Body Mechanics, that he was now at a new practice, and that AZ Body Mechanics was maintaining those records. If necessary, I can coordinate with Dr. Doty and or I assume there was potentially counsel involved in a divorce of that nature to get any finalization of agreements, but any lack of access or failure to provide records was certainly not intentional on his part. He simply did not have access to the records. And if we need to provide additional information with respect to the family court documents, we're happy to work to obtain those and provide those to the board.
Okay, thank you. For the record, Ms. Carvis presented additional information, and I'm going to read those into the record before I get to my board members' questions. So I've got an address change form that's dated 10/25/2017. I do have a certificate that says Grafton Technique for the year of 2015 that is good for 12 hours. And then I've got letters from patients with initials DT, D as in David, T as in Tom, SO, KS, and TC. And that said, it is interesting to me when complainants retract statements and they want to drop, you know, a complaint against a licensee, but that doesn't change the action that the boards take. You know, we are here once the information is given to us and we see any violations of statute, we are obligated to act on that. So we never just turn our back and walk away from the materials that are in front of us because the complainant drops the case or drops the complaint. And with that, I'm going to go ahead and ask my board members if they have any questions at this point. And let's start with Mr. Turbinson.
I have nothing at this time.
Okay. How about Dr. Knopf?
I also don't have any additional questions at this point.
Okay, Ms. Powell?
Yes, I have a couple of questions. Dr. Roy, you need to have an agreement, a written agreement in place anytime you transfer records, whether you're retiring or you're leaving the practice temporarily or selling it, there needs to be something in writing. You are responsible always. You're billing insurance, and the insurance only is what you're accepting for the patients. They don't have any co-pays that you're collecting or deductibles. Whatever the insurance pays, that's what you agreed to accept as payment in full.
I'm sorry. Was there one or two questions there? You asked something, and then you asked something else.
I'm sorry. The last question.
So in regards to billing,
yes.
Patients would have either a copay or core insurance.
You collected.
That was collected. And then we would accept the rest from the insurer.
Did you not write off your – you said you were in network or out – you were out of network at the time.
Yes.
So there is not an allowable amount, and then you write off. What were you going to do with the remaining balances?
So that was the task of our office at the time, to handle the back end. I understood the accounts receivable probably was not working out as best as it should. I do know that when Dr. DeWolf and I were going through our mediation to separate our ways, she had mentioned about sending patients to collections. I said, I have no issue with receiving money to the practice. But I said, the accounts receivable has to be correct. You can't just blanket all of our patient base with, hey, go ahead and send them the collections. I'm like, you can't do that.
So you did not leave her with an accurate accounts receivable.
Basically. I don't like the idea that you're saying that it was I who left. It was our practice.
And I think to clarify that situation, from my understanding with respect to that, there was an agreement in place that those amounts would not be collected, meaning they weren't going to be balance billed for amounts that were not covered by insurance beyond those co-pays. Dr. Doty never undertook to collect any of those things and attempted to explain that to Dr. DeWolf. But I think as evidenced by the fact that she was in fact kind of taking over the business is further evidenced by the fact that she's the one who undertook these collection efforts, and that shows that she was the one who was kind of stepping in and trying to do something there. So he certainly never attempted to collect from any of those patients. Obviously, hindsight being what it is, there would have been a much cleaner way to deal with that. And unfortunately, this was a personal and a business divorce, which both of which can get very messy and obviously left some loose ends tied up that unfortunately impacted some patients that
right.
Should not have happened.
Unless you're keeping accurate records, it would have been difficult for her to know who to collect from. The write-offs would have been in place. And there's an inaccuracy there, and that's a stumbling block. Also, tell me about the DME company. You have an arrangement with them to provide your patients DME products, and they bill the patient's insurance. Patient gets the check, and they're supposed to bring it into your office. Is that right?
That sounds correct. Sorry, it's been a while. I don't work with that DME company anymore. At the time, we would get – sorry.
No, you're fine.
Thank you. No, we would offer dural medical equipment to our patients. Whatever billing was done, we expected patients to bring the checks in. Essentially, that's how it's going. That's even how it's going with me today. If I'm at a network, I explain to them ahead of time, hey, keep an eye on your mail. Checks come in, they can be brought to me, and or if they can keep themselves, and then they can just pay me directly.
I noticed on one of the invoices that the DME was applied to the deductible. Did you collect the deductibles and copays on the DME, or did the DME company collect the copays or deductibles?
From what I recall, yeah, I understood that we did a lot of the collections ourselves. Before I left, we had plans in place working with patients where we would put together a plan. We sat down with them. Here's your deductible. Here's what your per visit will be. And we would break it down. Then they would pay us, and then we would accept the insurance. That's how it was. That's how we ran it for a long time.
So they misunderstood the fact that they didn't have to pay anything. In other words, the doctor said they would just accept our insurance as payment.
I'm wondering if there's some confusion here, because when I sat down with the patients, I explained to them exactly what they knew was going to be happening. It's unfortunate that this happened, that these patients were sent to collections. I would never do that. I worked tirelessly for a week in March 2018 to make sure that, hey, this was not me. This is not supposed to happen.
I understand.
I worked my I was on the phone for a week straight dealing with patients, crying, upset, saying that their credit's going to be hit. They can't get a loan for a house. I said, I will do everything in my power to make this better. And I did. And I've provided the letters. And I understand that it's interesting that these patients had a knee-jerk reaction because I was typically the face of the practice at the time. They were dealing with me. When I left, I left. And a lot of those patients I still see today because they joined me at my other practice. The fact that Dr. DeWolf sent in the collections, I think, was unforgivable. That's why I'm here to do my best to try to answer all the questions. Obviously, I understand that if there was a mistake made in regards to the records, obviously, I know that's never going to happen again.
It seemed that these patients all were under the impression that when the checks came in, they brought them to the office, but that was it. Their responsibility for payment was through. They didn't have any additional sums to pay.
Correct.
So that would have been insurance only.
Well, no. Okay. They would have paid their copay. Well, no. Patients would
copay.
Okay. Well, they would pay it out of their copay or part of the deductible, and then any other checks that they brought in would be applied.
For the DME.
For the DME. For any services.
Thank you. That's all.
Okay.
Before we get to Dr. Bennett, this is Dr. Guarino again. When we heard Dr. DeWolf's testimony last month, she said that she was pretty much hands-off with the clinic until you left, that she was not treating and she was not involved in billing until you left. And then she came in and was trying to figure out what was going on and balance bill patients and that kind of thing. Do you agree with that statement?
No.
Okay.
No, because she was a part of the practice as well. She may not have been consistently hands-on with patients, but okay, when we were married, obviously it's a difficult environment at times. We have both home and work coming together. Oftentimes she'd be the one that would make the final decision on most major decisions within the practice. When it came to the billing, we attempted hiring someone to do the back end for us. We were going to do 8% with the company that was collecting. It became very, very difficult and became very expensive, to the point where I remember her saying, well, you know, then you've got to do it. Well, great. Not only was I having to do that, I was also actively treating patients, managing an office. We had, at one point in time, as many as 22 staff. It's not an easy thing. Again, I apologize. I'm sorry that this happened in the first place and that there's been some miscommunication and you guys don't have the records. Again, I'm not here to try to make things any worse. I want to make things better. I just want to give.
I need concise answers.
I'm sorry.
For time, I need to answer.
I do not agree with everything that she said, because I think she's now trying to lay blame on me when I clearly am not the one that sent patients to collections.
Okay, so let me ask you then: was she actively in the practice, showing up to work, making decisions at work, supervising billing?
From time to time, yes.
Okay. And then what about you? Were you supervising billing?
Yes.
I know you were the treating provider. You had testified in the past. So you were involved. I know you had an outside biller, right? And then you were involved in seeing checks coming in, posting to accounts, that kind of thing. You were aware of patient balances and that type of thing, correct?
Correct.
Okay. Dr. Bennett.
By way of technical issues, am I coming through the system now, despite the fact that I have the microphone muted on my
yes.
computer?
Yes.
Okay, very well. Dr. Doty, Dr. Wayne Bennett. So I still have confusion that I'd like to clarify with regard to ownership of the clinic. I understand that a divorce is a divorce, and I understand that walking away from a relationship is walking away from a relationship. But sometimes a divorce settlement or some other business document can still, you know, part of that agreement might be partial ownership or no ownership or right to receive revenues from that practice into the future and so forth. And that's where I am unclear. And so I need to find out, are you in fact, or subsequent to your divorce, did you retain any ownership of the clinic?
No, sir.
And is that in writing someplace?
I have something in writing, but nothing signed. We did mediation with a Mr. Paul Joseph as we were going through the process, and we went through that for almost a year, and we could not agree on how to separate the business and all the assets at the time. And it was just essentially left until we went and got our divorce finalized. Not only that, we went through the process of...
Excuse me, I understand that it took a long period of time and that it gets convoluted.
Sure.
But it's kind of odd at the point. The point is, it seems inconsistent to me that you would walk away after all of this negotiation with not something written.
Presumably, obviously they're divorced. I think both of them are remarried. So obviously there is a final divorce decree. I haven't seen it, so I don't know if it specifically outlines in that divorce decree a division of assets. Family law is very far outside of my area of specialty, but I've seen decrees that have that information. And again, if this board would like to see something in writing with respect to where this business entity was left as far as the family court is concerned when the divorce was over, I'm happy to coordinate with Dr. Doty and any counsel that was involved to provide that.
Thank you. It's just that clarity, I believe, is needed here. As Dr. Guarino properly raised as an issue, it's a serious deal to not respond, and if you have an ownership interest, then you are accountable. And that's a key point. And so I want to reinforce what Dr. Group, the point on that. Did your clinic at the time of the care provided to these patients employ a physical therapist?
Let me ask the question again. Is this at the time that this occurred in 2018, or was it when I was involved with the practice prior to?
Let me be more specific.
Thank you.
The care that was provided to the patients, the complainants, the original complainants, was that care provided by a physical therapist under the employment of your clinic at that time?
I believe there was a few that received care from a physical therapist that was with us at the time.
Okay.
I don't remember specifically all the patients that made complaints. I'm not 100% sure.
Okay. And my reason for concern here is, as I reviewed the billing records, as we've already iterated and I will reiterate, we could not compare the billing records to the treatment records because we couldn't get the treatment records. But I see codes in those billing records that are specific to a physical therapist and not to a chiropractor. And so it would be of concern to this board if you were, as a chiropractor, for instance, billing 97001, which is a physical therapy evaluation code. And so there are concerns that we have relative to that. Another line of questioning, and did you have a further response?
Well, I was going to say, we did have a physical therapist, and I know the difference in coding. So, no, I would never build a PT code such as that under a chiropractor, no.
Okay. And then in the same area with regard to physical medicine codes, as you know, it's within our scope of practice to provide, as chiropractors, physical medicine modalities, rehab, and so forth. Our profession has worked long and hard over decades to elevate the recognition of chiropractors as physical medicine providers to a status equal to other providers who are able to bill and provide and bill for and be compensated for these services. And with that ability, there comes a responsibility. And so when I look at these records and I see $800 billed for a patient for 2 hours of Pilates delivered as rehabilitation codes, it disturbs me greatly. And I'm wondering how you think that's appropriate as a provider and medically necessary.
Well, I'm not quite sure on the term why you say Pilates. I understand that Pilates was used in our practice as a hands-on means of physical medicine. And there was never a time when someone would be there for 2 hours of Pilates. There would be a breakdown between two. I do understand that we had a session with our physical therapist, as well as a session with the chiropractor. We also had sessions with other CAs providing other modalities in the practice.
Who's coordinating that? Excuse me for interrupting. Who coordinates? Is that you as the primary doctor coordinating that care?
It was myself. We had Dr. Barbara Goldsworthy, who was a physical therapist. Dr. DeWolf was also involved in some of the care at times.
So my point being, the primary care coordinator, the person responsible for authoring the patient's treatment plan, was you or another doctor of chiropractic who could not be a physical therapist by virtue of the fact that they're not able to diagnose and so forth, correct?
That would be a good correct assumption, yes.
Okay, so if there was a treatment plan that was providing overly excessive services other than what was medically necessary, that would be considered overutilization and would be a threat to the public and would be a liability to the profession of chiropractic. And again, this is why it may well be that 2 hours of Pilates exercise in a single patient's treatment encounter, regardless of who did it, 2 hours may be medically necessary, but I've never seen it, and I've looked at a record or two, and I would really want to see those records to determine the medical appropriateness of that kind of practice, which I saw as a pattern repetitively with every patient record or every patient billing issue that I looked at. And so I can't really render an opinion as to whether this has been unprofessional conduct or not without access to those records, but it looks very, you know, it's quacking like a duck to me.
Okay. Do you have any response to that?
I mean, again, we would, unfortunately, with the EMR system, does not have access to that. I don't know if there is a way in which for him to repurchase access to it and get that information. I don't know necessarily the appropriateness of that with respect to his ownership or lack thereof of the business. We understand the board is at an information deficit, and he obviously did his best to provide the information that he had access to. And if there's anything that we can do to address the information deficit, then we're happy to do that. I don't know if that's a possibility. I don't know enough about their EMR to know if he could repurchase access and get it, because I don't know if anyone is still using it or anything like that. But we'd be happy to attempt to determine if that's an option.
One minor question additional, and then I think I'm finished. There are a number of occasions where it appears, Dr. Doty, that you just didn't respond to the board. As I look through here, there seemed to be a couple of occasions where you just didn't respond to the board. Can you explain that?
If I didn't respond, it's because I didn't receive the information. I take this very seriously. I have all the information I've received regarding at least this case, I believe I've responded to.
Okay.
And if I have not responded, then I'm deeply sorry.
Okay. I acknowledge the possibility of some administrative error or lack of communication. But again, a non-response is an area of concern, and it needs verification.
Okay.
Dr. Greeno?
Yes.
Excuse me for interrupting. Can I ask just one last question about Sorry? You said some of these patients you're treating now in your new practice. Any of the claimants?
He's just looking at initials.
Sure.
At the initials. I don't believe any of the claimants here, no. No.
None of them?
No, but
they wrote letters of retraction. I just wondered if they were.
Oh, these ones, no. I have not seen them in the new practice.
Thanks.
Dr. Greeno, one more question, please. Dr. Doty, and this is Dr. Knopf for the record. Dr. Doty, when did you stop receiving any kind of financial benefit from AZ Body Works, or did you continue to receive financial benefit or payment past the time that you walked away from the clinic?
No. The day I left was I don't recall the exact date, but it was October 2017. I no longer received any benefits, no monetarily of any kind.
Okay, that's all. Thank you.
Okay. Thank you, Dr. Knopf. Dr. Doty, I have a question. And, you know, one of the allegations is that you are impersonating another physician. There was a Dr. Blonda, a naturopath that was on staff with your office. And it seems that claims may be denied under one provider were resubmitted under Dr. Blonda's name and license in an attempt to recoup payment. And we've got an email correspondence with your biller who says, I know we're wanting these claims submitted under Dr. Blonda because she's an authorized provider and will be paid. However, this can be considered billing fraud. I know Harry and or H&D will resubmit for you, but just keep this in mind. If the office is ever audited, it could cause issues. And then there's a reply. Where you're saying, go ahead and bill it, you know, underneath Dr. Blonda. So it seems that you were put on notice by the person who was helping you do billing, and you went ahead and said, well, if we're getting paid, let's go ahead and submit it under this person's, under a different provider's name. So what do you say to that?
And could you, just for clarification's sake, since obviously this has been a long time, could you indicate specifically which, and if you have to use initials, that's fine, because you should know who that was, who the biller is in question. And just to clarify, you're asking about if things would ever be resubmitted under this other physician's name. Is that your?
Yeah, so board members, I'm looking at our tab materials for 2018-021 around page 12 of 13.
Sorry, what number, doctor?
2018-021.
Okay.
In our materials, there's a 13-page complaint. And as you scroll down, we've got a patient with the initials, and this is March 24th, 2017, for the email that I'm looking at, which is from someone with the initials EW, who I guess you know who that is, and she wishes to remain anonymous, but that was the person involved in your billing at that time. And then it says, a patient with the initials T as in Tom, C as in Cat. So, how often did this happen? Is my question. It should never happen, right?
Correct.
It's a common practice in your office. If you didn't get billed one way, submit it through another provider.
Not that I could remember. All I understand is that, you know, I try to do things the proper way. So I want to make sure that it's whoever's seeing the provider, that's who it should be billed underneath. And again, I do not recall this.
Okay. And so I've got an email that I'm looking at from you on March 23rd on page 12 of 13, board members. It says, this being said, can we please check into patient J, S, and TC, their claims? If TC's claims are being paid only under Dr. Blonda, can we please resubmit all, A, capital L, capital L, all her PT claims under her? So, and it's by you. And so it looks like you are instructing your biller to send physical therapy claims under a naturopath's license that was performed in your clinic.
I would have only wanted them to bill anything under Dr. Blonda, only if she had ever seen the patient.
And so did Dr. Blonda as a naturopath perform physical therapy services in your office?
Not that I can recall.
Okay. Okay. At this point, I'm going to ask if any of the complainants are present in person or virtually, and if they would like to speak for any of the cases that we mentioned. So I'm calling out to the virtual audience. If you are one of the complainants, this is your time to speak up. We want to protect your identity, so we'll use your initials only. Is there anybody that wants to speak at this point? If you are on, you are muted and we cannot hear you. You can raise a hand and wave at us if you've got a video up, and we'll try to unmute you. Okay. Hearing none, I'm going to make a motion that we move into executive session to consult our assistant attorney general to receive legal counsel.
Second.
This matter.
Second.
Got a second by Dr. Bennett. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
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 Aye. Are there any opposed? Okay. We have five ayes. The time is 9:47, and we are going to move into another room and contact our board members to have our executive session, and then we'll be back shortly, and we'll continue the meeting.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Dr. Neary.
Thank you for your patience. Okay, so do we have Mr. Turbinson back?
Not yet.
Yep, I'm here.
Okay.
Okay.
And Dr. Knopf, you can hear us as well?
Yes, I can. Thank you.
Okay. So you're currently practicing, correct?
Yes.
Okay. Before we go into deliberations, I'm going to ask my board members if they have any further questions for you. But one of my questions for you is, you know, we're in this situation where I feel you should have maintained the records and should have had access to those for exactly this reason in case it ever came before the board. Would you be agreeable to perhaps a consent agreement, probationary order that would require you to do current record audits that would allow us to keep you on our radar and see that you're not participating in all the practices that we have evidence of in front of us right now to keep your license?
He'd be willing to do anything that this board requires and would be more than happy to submit to audits for his current records. And prior to answering any other questions, if I may, Dr. Guarino, and during a break, I took the opportunity to review Dr. Doty's hard copy file because I wanted to address the situation as to a lack of response to two of the complaints. I did speak with Ms. Kennell to try and confirm. Dr. Doty, I think, has obviously learned a lot of valuable lessons, including not responding to a board complaint before you have a lawyer, but that's a selfish lawyer thing to say. But in looking through his papers, there is a letter from Ms. Kennell dated March 14th of 2018 saying, pursuant to our telephone conversation this morning, the enclosed are copies of the complaints mailed certified to you, and it lists those out because the mail was returned apparently. And then in Dr. Doty's hard copy file, there is in fact a written response to complaint number 2018-041 and 045, both dated March 20 of 2018. I did ask Ms. Kennell, and for whatever reason that is not part of the board file, but he does have in his possession a response that he believes was submitted, and we're happy to provide another copy of that. Additionally, after he was notified that the information was going to be considered by the board on February 4th of 2019, he provided a supplemental response referencing complaint number 21, 22, 30, 41, and 45 all in one letter, since they dealt with the same issues. So I don't know if it only got into one file and not the other, but per his information,
he believes that he did, in fact, respond, and we're happy to submit these. And for whatever reason, obviously, there's not a return receipt, but he does show that he did provide a written response, and that's why he was confused by the board saying that he didn't respond. But he, again, he's been licensed by this board since 2005, hasn't had any disciplinary action or complaints relating to billing issues, has been practicing since he left, and believes that his billing is appropriate, and he would be willing to do whatever this board would like in order to make sure that the public is being protected and that his billing is appropriate. So we would certainly be willing to entertain a consent agreement that would allow this board to do that, and we'd appreciate that opportunity.
Okay, thank you. So with that, board members, do you have any additional questions for either Dr. Doty or his counsel before we go into deliberations, and we'll be done speaking to them at that point? Okay. Thank you very much. This concludes the portion of the formal interview in which the board hears testimony. The board will now deliberate and decide what to do in this matter. So, board members, what's your pleasure?
Mr. Chairman, for the record, it's Dr. Bennett. We have a very muddy bunch of water here. We've got concerns, but no a ready ability to verify the veracity or the basis of the suspicion. Yet there's a clear indication that there are concerns that we should have here, and I believe that that a consent agreement would be in a way for us to do exactly as Ms. Kennel said, and that is be reassured that the behavior that we're suspicious may have occurred is not occurring at this point in time. And so I would rather do that than to figure out some way to get access to these records that nobody knows if there's even access to them. So there's that concern. I believe that we have clear evidence of a violation of 902-10 with regard to the identity of providers, and there's disciplinary action appropriate for that. I believe that there's an issue with regard to the responsibility taken or not taken by Dr. Doty relative to documenting as the owner of a practice and where those medical records should go and so forth. That's the onus of a provider and should therefore be assumed by him, and I do not believe that it was. I think it's clear that it was not. And so for those reasons, I believe that that we should move forward with offering a consent agreement that would consist of probation with record audits on a quarterly basis for at the board's pleasure, somewhere between 1 and 2 years, that there be a required jurisprudence education component to it. And because of the egregiousness of the issue with regard to the identity and billing under somebody else's name, I believe that a $1,000 fine should be levied against Dr. Doty.
Okay, and so when we when a consent agreement is drafted, you know, it may or may not be signed by Dr. Doty. He may look at it and say, you know, this is not agreeable to me. So, you know, when somebody makes a motion in that direction, I think we're probably in agreement that we're moving to a formal hearing where we would take disciplinary action of our choice if needed or other action that would give them an opportunity to get us more documentation of maybe the written agreement about the transfer of the practice and some of the other things that we requested that we don't have. And in the meantime, if the consent agreement is agreeable, then he can sign it and we'll be done with this matter. Other board members, what are your thoughts?
I agree. I think that's right now.
Okay.
Yeah, this is Dr. Knopf. I think it's in my mind, because we think this, we've got enough to know that this happened as it relates to billing issues in the previous practice, and thinking about what is in the consent agreement. I tend to lean more towards a 1-year probationary period, and rather than quarterly audit, I might suggest just a set number of record audits that they have to go through. And once those are completed successfully, there can be a petition for early termination of the probation.
Okay, Mr. Turbinson, any thoughts?
I generally agree with Dr. Bennett's proposal on the three different CLE or continuing education, the record audits, and the $1,000 fine.
Okay, thank you. Go ahead.
I apologize, Chair, board members. And as far as that record audit, would that be for billing? Would it be a chart audit? What kind of records were you considering there?
I think both.
Agreed.
Both? Okay.
Both, yes. You know what? I understand the burden of a probationary, order, and it's a disciplinary order, my concern if the period is too short and there's just a number of audits to jump through with an early termination clause, that could be somebody on best behavior for half a year that passes an audit and goes right back to doing some of the behaviors they were doing. So I feel like it should be at least a year. And that's just my thought. So at this point, I'll entertain a motion. Somebody would like to make one.
Mr. Chairman, I move that we offer a consent agreement to Dr. Doty, which would consist of the option of presented by the board of 1 year of probation with an ongoing monitor of audits of records, both billing and treatment. I would say a minimum of 20 records that we should be within treatment within 6 months of the date of the audit. That 3 hours of continuing education on jurisprudence be completed by Dr. Doty within a 90-day period of time, and that we levy a $1,000 fine.
Okay, and if not signed, or we're going to formal hearing, or? And
yeah, without signature, move forward to a formal hearing.
Okay, and what is the time period for him to sign that?
30 days.
I don't know if it'll be drafted within 30 days.
Okay.
But it should be close to then.
I would defer to staff on what a reasonable period of time might be considered.
I would say 60. This is Assistant Attorney General Seamus Monahan, just because of the nature of the agreement, 60. You're okay with that?
Very well.
Okay. Is there a second?
I second the motion.
Is Powell seconded? Any further discussion?
Yes, for discussion, I believe we had issued jurisprudence continuing ed in the past, and there was some issues finding classes that count as jurisprudence. Do we know that those hours exist and can be obtained and completed?
Dr. Knopf, if I may, Marino. Yes, those continuing education hours are available. That was a special circumstance due to physical limitations for the individual you're referring to.
Okay, thank you.
Okay, I'm going to call for the question, and let's do a roll call vote because we're partially virtual here.
Did we get a second there? I apologize. I missed that.
Ms. Powell seconded.
Thank you.
Okay, I will commence with a roll call. Ms. Angela Powell?
Yes, present.
And Dr. Bennett?
Aye.
Dr. Knopf?
Aye.
Okay, Mr. Turbinson?
Aye.
Dr. Guarino?
Aye. Okay, so we have five ayes in favor of forwarding this to formal hearing and offering a consent agreement. This concludes our formal interview today, and if you have any questions, you can contact staff on another day.
Thank you very much. We appreciate the opportunity and look forward to receiving the consent agreement.
All right. Thank you.
Thank you.
Ms. Carvis is the Assistant Attorney General Seamus Monahan. I will be in touch with you early next week.
Sounds good, Seamus. Thank you.
Yes.
Okay, the time is 10:23. Does anybody need a 10-minute break? Okay, we'll go on a break. Thank you.
Thank you.
Okay, so we'll resume at 10:33. We are back in open session. Our next agenda item is tab number 2. This is initial action on complaints in the matter of John Duff. Dr. Nayeri, can you give us a
report? Yes, sir. In the matter of Dr. John M. Duff, allegations are patient abandonment, breach of confidentiality, failure to release medical records, non-compliance with board subpoenas, and unprofessional conduct.
Okay. Dr. Duff, you can come on up and have a seat. Introduce yourself for the record, please.
Dr. John Duff.
Hi, welcome.
Thank you.
Okay, so last time when you came, you told us that you had compiled patient records. We have a letter from the patient saying that she had received the records, and from her perspective, she was happy. But we don't have the records, and I don't know why we don't have the records, because we asked for them last time when you were here. You said you had them. A month has passed. Why don't we have the records?
I had brought the records that last time when I was here. Nobody asked for them when I was here. The notice that I received before Christmas to come to this meeting just said to bring everything here. There was no other notice. At the end of last meeting, you said that you would send in writing to send those in. We checked the mail December 20th. The only thing in there was the certified notice to come to this meeting and to bring everything. After Christmas, I got sick. The office had to shut down the entire week of Christmas to New Year's. When we checked the mail again, there was the letter saying, please send the records in, and a couple of other items. So the items requested were sent on Monday, and the tracking information stated that they were received yesterday.
Okay. So obviously the board has not had time to review any records you submitted, which you were subpoenaed a long time ago to provide to us. So board members, what questions do you have for Dr. Duff?
Are you going in any particular order, Mr. Chairman?
We'll start with you, Dr. Bennett. We made you go last time.
Okay, thank you. Good day, Doc. there's a concern that has been expressed by the complainant initially that we now have to have due diligence relative to, and that is with regard to patient confidentiality. And I'd like to hear your end of things. She, patient, the complainant contends that your wife had access to her medical history. And so that leads us to a couple of points of inquiry, one of which is your wife, number one, did your wife have access to texts or emails, as was alleged, that had contained patient information?
She did have access to emails and texts, yes.
Mm-hmm. Okay, thank you. Mm-hmm. And is your wife a staff person, or is there a, is your wife on staff at the clinic?
Yeah.
Okay, all right, thank you. And just, I guess, for the record, it appears to me that we have, let me be accurate, just give me a moment for the sake of accuracy. I'm sure board staff can advise me quicker than I can look this up. When When was Dr. Duff notified of this complaint?
Originally, yes. Or?
I'm seeing as early as August of 2020. Is that correct? Or is that, no, this is other correspondence. Never mind, that's not correct. Do you recall, Dr. Duff, when you first received notification of this complaint?
I actually received it via email the end of August of 2020.
So thereabouts. Okay. No, I have no further questions at this time.
Ms. Powell, any questions?
No questions.
Okay, how about Dr. Knopf?
Yeah, thank you, Dr. Guarino. Dr. Duff, you said that you didn't get the notice to submit materials until after that week that you were sick and ill and you had to close down your office, which I understand was the week of Christmas, so the week of the, what would that have been? The
week of the 27th through the 31st.
And then you would have received this letter the week of the 3rd?
Correct.
And then you, if I'm correct, when you said Monday that you sent it, meaning you sent it on the 10th, just a couple of days ago.
Correct.
Okay. And I guess my question for staff is was that within compliance of what was requested in the letter? Would that have met that requirement?
I'm not quite sure I understand your question.
I think, Dr. Knopf, the original subpoena requested those records over a year ago.
Okay.
And
all right. That
and then that, go ahead.
That helps. So then this letter that was received, it just asked to send it in prior to this meeting. And unfortunately we didn't have those records until just correct. Yesterday. Okay.
Yeah, it also asked for documentation on continuing education from 2018 and 2019 and a written response.
And did you submit for 2018 and 2019 as well?
Correct. Yes. Okay. But you mean the CE credit?
Do we have any confirmation from staff that any of this has been received?
I don't. It's not in my computer.
Okay.
My expectation is if they've received the green receipt back, it's probably been received by the ADOA mailroom, but has yet to make it to board staff.
Okay. Okay. So we should continue the matter with the new information, and I'll take a motion to that effect.
So moved, Mr. Chairman.
Okay.
A second.
Okay. Any further discussion? Okay, hearing none, I'll call for the question. Those in favor signify by saying aye.
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 This is Assistant Attorney General Seamus Monahan. Just for clarification, is that to the February 25th meeting?
Well, we're not going to meet in February, I don't believe.
You have a special meeting on the 25th, not a full board meeting.
So I'm going to leave that at Dr. Nayeri's discretion to handle the great juggling act of the executive director to put this on the agenda when he can.
Okay.
Yes, sir.
Okay.
Thank you.
Okay. Are there any opposed? Okay. Hearing none, the motion carries. We're going to continue the investigation and give us a chance to look at the information you submitted. Okay, so that concludes the matter for today.
So just keep an eye out for when to appear next. Probably in March, is that what it sounds like?
Yeah, well, you'll get a notice. That'll
am I dismissed from the meeting altogether then?
Pardon me?
Am I dismissed or do I need to stay the rest of the...
Yeah, I don't see you on our agenda anywhere else. So if you don't have any other cases in front of us, you're done with us today.
Thank you.
Thank you.
May I ask, so did you bring records with you? Or...
Yes.
Okay, so would you please submit those to Ms. Kennel before you leave? That way we won't get into the same thing, saying
yes.
Nobody asked for them?
Nobody asked for them before.
Well,
no.
Okay, so I'm asking now.
It is the original. Okay.
Oh, it's the original record?
It's the original record.
So
copies were mailed and received yesterday.
Well, then I would ask you to please send your copies of your records to us by mail, by certified mail.
Yeah, I did that.
The earliest possible.
And I got the receipt that they were received.
Okay, so you have. Okay.
Yes.
All right. Thank you.
Thank you.
Okay. Okay, we're going to go on to tab number three in the matter of Dr. Karen Peterson. Mr. Carey, you can come on up, have a seat. And Dr. Nayiri, will you please give us a board briefing?
Yes, sir. In the case of Dr. Karen Peterson, the allegations are not reporting action, investigation in another jurisdiction, violation of board order, non-renewal of chiropractic license, non-compliant with CE, failure to provide information to the board, and unprofessional conduct.
Okay, so the main reason that, and I'm speaking for the board right now, and we'll all have our own opinions about this, but we're here primarily because we have a failure to comply with the subpoena issue. I know that you're driving toward reinstatement, and I think we're at a pretty big impasse with that. But with that said, I'm going to allow you to give an opening statement, and then we're going to go ahead and ask questions like we normally do, and we'll see where we land on this today.
All right, and I guess I'm confused as to where the noncompliance with the subpoena occurred, because we did provide everything in our possession and control concerning Dr. Peterson. So if we could be, if someone could clarify for us where there's a perception that there's noncompliance with the subpoena, I'd be happy to discuss that.
Okay, and we'll get to that. Do you have anything else you'd like to say right now?
Yeah, I think we need to look at this a little bit more globally. This is a case where we started with an allegation that she didn't report a nursing board action. There was a misunderstanding, I think, with the board materials that she had somehow been summarily suspended, and she hadn't been. She had entered into an agreement with the nursing board. We provided that information, and in fact, in our supplemental response, we showed you that she didn't even have notice of a board investigation until mid-2019. So there was not even notice of a board investigation. There's an allegation that she failed to renew for 2020, and that she failed to renew for 2021. But when she filed her reinstatement, she fully and fairly disclosed exactly what happened with the nursing board. And it's your statutes that allow her to use the reinstatement process for renewal. And so every time she has made a statement to this board, she's done it correctly, she's done it accurately, and she's provided you accurate information. And I think you have to look at where this case started. It started with this someone who failed to disclose something from another jurisdiction, which your statutes do not include a provision for that. Now it's turned into she didn't renew. Now it's turned into she didn't check. She checked the inactive box, believing that she was inactive. So this has gone from somewhere where she has purposefully told the board that she or purposefully hidden from the board her nursing action, which I don't think is supported by any of the evidence. And now it's turned into she checked an incorrect box by indicating she's inactive after 4 years at least of the board not taking any action on this case after indicating that it was going to turn it into a formal, and after there's significant correspondence between two different counsel before me with Justin Bohol indicating their belief that she was in some sort of limbo status or status where there was not a requirement to do further things related to the consent agreement. So what this is a procedural morass. We've been given a subpoena, and under Arizona law, and there's multiple cases, but there's one case in particular that cites to the New York Supreme Court saying, we can't provide you information we don't have. So under the subpoena, we provided you what we had. We brought the certificate that we mentioned in our statement. She's completed 36 now hours of continuing education. Here's another 12 that she did this weekend, so that if there's any question about 2022, she's done another set of board-approved continuing education. So in my opinion, and based on everything I've seen, she has satisfied everything that has been requested of her by this board and attempted to comply. She's now requesting reinstatement, and she's requesting reinstatement, which is supported by all of her documents. The only outstanding item is, has she provided proof from anywhere else she holds a license? The Arizona Nursing Board now works with an online database called Nursis. That is a third-party verification service. They don't send anything to boards. What happens is you hit it, you do a search, and she's up there. The American Academy of Nurse Practitioners is more like if you ask the state bar whether I passed the bar exam. There's a certificate here that says she is valid from 2015 to 2025. We have a letter right here from them as well. I don't know what we're missing when it comes to the subpoena. Everything has been satisfied. And I know we've gone through this a few times, but there's nothing that indicates any sort of intent by Dr. Peterson, either A, not to follow board orders, or B, to somehow deceive the board. The reality is that this went off the procedural rails back in 2017. And I think the mindset should be, how do we correct that? How do we get everyone back on track? How do we get her into a consent agreement for a non-practicing DC to be able to keep her license, not use it at this time, but be able to still maintain it? I mean, she's obviously willing to do the community, continuing education. She's willing to pay the fees related to it. And so I think this is a matter of where I don't want to be in a position where we're looking for a dishonesty. We're looking for a problem when I think what we have is a procedural issue here.
Thank you. Okay. So you made a comment that, like you've completely dismissed the part of her having a board order that required her to do the quarterly reporting. You stated in the past that like you were working some kind of an agreement out with a past executive director. The executive director doesn't have the authority to change anything. You can work with them and they can bring something in front of the board, but until the board agrees to it, the original board order still stands. And so she has not been compliant in reporting her quarterly reports for several years now. And the renewal that we didn't get for 2020 or 2021 directly coincides with when she was being investigated by the nursing board in 2019. And so we didn't get a disclosure on that she was being investigated because she didn't renew. So she was required to renew and she didn't. And I understand that you're driving toward reinstatement, but we've got serious problems with the failure to comply with the board subpoena or the board order. And that board order goes back many, many years as a result of improper record keeping and problems with record keeping that seems to persist. Even with the nursing board, they found a bunch of deficiencies and thought that she was a danger to the public to the point where they pointed that out in their order. So I feel like we're back where we started. We don't have any evidence that she ever corrected her record keeping because she's been on a disability for so many years. And now the nursing board has found problems with her record keeping. And now you're saying everything's good. She did a bunch of continuing education. She did so much this year that we should forget about what happened in the past years when she didn't renew her license. So there's a whole bunch of things that have gone wrong here. And that's my opinion. And I'm going to ask my board members if they have questions now.
Could I respond to that, Dr. Guarino? Because I don't agree with your characterization.
Do you have new information?
Well, I don't agree with is your characterization. The thing that is unique here is that we have a licensee who is not practicing, and you don't have a bill. You're not going to audit someone who doesn't have a patient complement.
And that is exactly why she was supposed to provide quarterly reports. They gave her the benefit of the doubt back then. They didn't revoke her license back then and say, you know what, your records are so bad that you're dangerous, we're going to take away your license. They said, we're going to give you a chance. We're going to put you on probation and give you a chance to go ahead and show us that your record keeping is standard. And so when she went on the disability, they gave her a second chance and said, you know what, keep your license. Just let us know every quarter so that when you start practicing again, we'll go ahead and you'll be on our radar and we'll be able to see what's happening with your record keeping.
I,
so at what point is it okay to stop giving us the quarterly reports?
I think where the breakdown was.
Will you answer my question, please?
Well, I'm going to answer that. And the where the breakdown was is that Ms. Romano, her previous counsel, and Mr. Souter, her previous counsel, both interacted with Mr. Bohol. We have documentation of them sending letters to Mr. Bohol. One of them right after the formal, that after the board suggested setting the matter for a formal, that didn't get set for several, has not been set for several years.
It doesn't matter. She had a board order to submit quarterly reports. So if you're in negotiations to create a new deal that has to be drafted and sent before our board and then approved by the board, she needs to continue with the board order until that happens.
What I'm aware of how that should play out under Title 32 and Title 41. The concern that I have and why I think this is, needs to be more of an equity situation is first because she's not practicing. And so there hasn't been any public harm here because she hasn't done anything with her license. But second of all, this is a situation in which those negotiations began. Emails and letters were sent between the lawyers and chiropractic board. And in conjunction with that, the board never took this matter back up. And so I understand that it may not be from a pure legal perspective executed properly. But I think what the problem is that she's not a lawyer. I think she's able to rely on the fact that this case just went dormant for several years. And in that interim, she hasn't done anything with her license that would really be problematic in the sense of going out there and attempting to open up a chiropractic office or anything like that. And so I think what we have is we have a negotiation. For some reason, it dropped off of everyone's radar, and I appreciate that, but I don't understand why the board would want to put all of that on Dr. Peterson and penalize her for that when it's clear that there were attorneys involved before my time on this case, and it's clear that there was no response from Mr. Bohol. I can't explain it. I wasn't practicing in front of this board in 2017, but when I go back and I read, and I saw this coming. That's why I set a public records request over to you to get every single one of your minutes, because I saw this coming. And I can't explain it either, why the whole thing just stopped. But I don't think it's equitable for a licensee to have to bear whatever mechanical issue happened here, because the reality is she's done her community, she's paid her CEUs, she's done those, she's paid for her license every year, she's paid for the reinstatement. I mean, she's done additional CEUs to be ready for 2022 if she's reinstated.
She has not paid for her license every year. She did not renew for 2020, nor did she renew for 2021.
As part of the reinstatement, she has to pay a reinstatement fee, and I believe has to pay for any amounts that she did not pay for. So, and the board has received a check for $570 for that. So she is.
I'm going to ask my board members if they have any questions for you, and we'll go from there. Let's start with Dr. Knopf.
This is Dr. Knopf. Thank you. I guess where I've got the biggest hang up is I realized that there was some kind of negotiating that was taking place between past attorneys and the executive director. But again, to Dr. Guarino's point, nothing changes until everything is formalized and signed off on by the board. So in my mind, the fact that a ball was dropped, or it feels like a ball was dropped is not really on the board at this point. I work with plenty of attorneys, and if as a client, we're not moving the ball or moving the needle on anything, it's my responsibility as a client to work with my attorney to make sure that I stay compliant, and that I keep moving the process along until something formally changes, or there's a new direction. And that's always the responsibility of the client, not the board or board staff. And where I'm getting confused is, okay, so we just stopped reporting quarterly, because there was discussions, but now we also have these 2 years where we just stopped renewing as well, which was part of the board order. And I don't understand why we're starting to drop more and more the requirements on this board order as we progress with time. So I have a hard time understanding why there was no effort to renew when it was ordered. And when someone has interest in maintaining their license, why would you not renew? That's the biggest question.
So, Dr. Kanoff, just to answer your first question about balls being dropped and lawyers and those types of things, we sent in as part of your packet for our first response, the negotiations between Ms. Romano and Executive Director Bohol happened in 2017. In 2018, as a show of lawyers moving the ball forward, Mr. Souders, her subsequent attorney, sent a letter to Mr. Bohol indicating, it is my understanding, based on an email from Carol Romano, that the board is not going to take any further action concerning this complaint unless Dr. Peterson decides to resume her chiropractic practice. If my understanding concerning the disposition of this matter is incorrect, please let me know. No response for over 3 years to that letter that was sent to Mr. Bohol. I guess the question that I have in regards to that is, I think that is an attorney moving things forward. And I'm at a loss at how Dr. Peterson should read that letter and the lack of a response from the chiropractic board without legal training and somehow say, oh no, I need to be conversant with Title 32 that says the board order is still active. I mean, there were two letters sent. There were multiple communications sent with a year apart. The lawyer came back to the board a second time and specifically said, my understanding is that the board's not going to take action unless she decides to resume her chiropractic practice, and asked Mr. Bohol for a response to confirm his understanding. And that never occurred. And
okay. So if you did not get a response confirming a specific action was going to happen, you can't sit back and say they didn't reply to me, so now it's okay for me to violate the board order. Dr. Bennett.
Yeah, you actually, Mr. Curry, said two different things, and I want to know what the document said. When you first read the document, you said take no further action.
Right.
And then you just said take no action.
Take no further action. I'm sorry if I was.
So the word further is very significant there. What that letter says is that if the board is taking no further action, then the last action the board took is what's actionable.
Well, again, I'm not going to parse what a lawyer from another firm 4 years
All
ago said.
All I'm saying
said.
is that is the obligation of this board. And our position, Dr. Guarino's position, Dr. Kanoff's position, and I share the position, is that whatever the last thing is that this board did officially is what's actionable. That correspondence says they're not going to take any more action other than what they've already done. And what they already did was what happened back then.
Ms. Powell. Okay, Mr. Turbinson.
Yeah, I mean, I kind of agree with Dr. Kanoff on this. I mean, you can't just send a letter and put the onus on the board to clarify what is already a board order. I mean, to me, that's just nonsensical. And I think, you know, her recourse there is against her former attorneys who apparently advised her incorrectly, not a get out of, you know, a board order free card. So that I don't really have any questions. I just wanted to point that out.
I have a procedural question.
Okay, go ahead, Dr. Bennett.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Our job is to protect the public. From this position, we have someone who seeks relicensure. We don't want to needlessly stop that from happening, but we have very serious concerns about what has happened in the past. And we are constrained by what we can or cannot do. And my question is a procedural question. I'm looking at our options, and we need to go into executive session or not, but it seems like if I'm looking at what our options are, we either grant licensure, which isn't going to happen without clarification on this, or we issue a non-disciplinary order for continuing education, which is at this point irrelevant, or we need to move forward to a formal interview. Those are our only options. Is it possible that there could be a consent agreement of any nature at all that would resolve this problem, or is that not an option before us at this point in time?
Dr. Bennett, this is Assistant Attorney General Seamus Monahan. Well, today you only have disciplinary options available. You have the option always to attempt to enter into a consent agreement with the respondent. And, you know, you could lay those terms out and offer it, or you could provide me a path and I could work with the attorney and we could bring it back before the board based on, whatever recommendations you give me today.
And to my colleague's point, that would certainly be something we would more than be on board with. I mean, the reality is our goal here would be to negotiate a consent agreement that the board would accept so that we can move past the procedural issues here. One of the issues we have is as Seamus explained, is you're kind of with this, the way this is noticed up today, you have some limited opportunities of what you can and can't do. But, you know, if you set this for a formal, nothing stops the board staff and the attorney and I and Dr. Peterson from negotiating something, providing it to the board, and then having the board review it. It doesn't become effective until the board says this is a consent agreement that they would accept. But honestly, you know, it gets lost in the legal discussion that we have to have, because as my job, I got to make a record. I have to take positions on things. The bottom line, though, is while I'm happy to respond to your legal questions and your procedural questions, our goal throughout this has been get her into a consent agreement that this board is happy with, that this board can live with, that lets her keep doing education, keep paying you her renewal fees. If you need check-ins of some sort, we can do that. But we want to cooperate. We want to get this done. What we don't want to do is be adverse to you or be fighting over procedural matters when there may be an opportunity to collaborate. And that's really why I framed my initial letter, very first paragraph, is that we want to be collaborative here. Unfortunately, when I wear my lawyer hat, I sometimes do have to push back on things that are said. That is in a professional way, and it is out of respect for this process, and it's certainly not a reflection on the board. But we are definitely on board with doing some kind of consent agreement here.
I understand. This is Dr. Guarino. I'm going to make a motion that we move into executive session.
Second.
For legal counsel. And we have a second by Dr. Bennett. Okay, all those in favor signify by saying aye.
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 Are there any opposed? Okay, hearing none. The time is 11:06 a.m. So we'll be back in a few minutes. Stay put. We'll be back. Okay, the time is 11:20. We're back in open session. Dr. Knopf, you're with us?
And yes,
Dr.
I am. Thank
Turbinson,
you.
You're with us. Okay.
Yes, I'm here.
All right. Thank you for your patience while we were getting legal advice. So, board members, what's your pleasure? Do you have any further questions for Mr. Flynn or Mr. Carey?
I have no questions. I'm prepared to make a motion, Mr. Chairman.
Okay.
Given the complexity of the situation, my motion would be that due to a clear failure to continue reporting or to renew licensure in accordance with 924-16, and due to the fact that her license has been refused or revoked by another licensing board during the same time frame, according to 924-14, we move this forward to a formal hearing.
And Dr. Bennett, I apologize. I gave you the wrong number. That would be 902-33. R47-902-33.
Okay, what he said.
Is there a second?
Second motion.
Okay, Ms. Powell seconded. Board members, is there any further discussion? Okay, Hearing none, I'll call for the question. Those in favor of moving this investigation to formal hearing, signify by saying aye.
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 Okay, are there any opposed? Okay, hearing none, we have five ayes to continue the matter to formal hearing, and that concludes the matter for today. So you'll be contacted by staff and invited back on another day for the formal hearing.
Thank you.
All right, thank you. Okay, we're going to go on to tab number four now with the weather to open in the matter of Dr. Harvey Abrams, D.C. Hi, Ms. Carvis.
Hello. Long time no see.
Yep.
I believe Dr. Abrams is on Zoom as well.
Hi, Dr. Abrams. Can you introduce yourself for the record, please?
Yeah, I'm Dr. Harvey Abrams.
Great, thank you. And Dr. Nayeri, we'll take a board brief when you're ready.
Yes, sir. Give me a moment, please. Don't seem to be able to locate my section on that one.
Dr. Abrams, we've received your complaint and we've read the materials. Would either you or Ms. Carvis like to make an opening statement?
Sure. Members of the board, just briefly, I know that this is only on the agenda as a weather to open, so the information and items that you're able to consider are limited. I did reach out to Ms. Kennel and obtain a copy of the written proposed complaint that was submitted to the board. Based on the information that we have reviewed and in consultation with my client, it would appear that this would be a billing dispute as opposed to a true allegation with respect to lack of professional conduct. We do not believe a complaint should be opened. However, if the board does open a complaint, Dr. Abrams looks forward to responding and providing information in support of the fact that the care that was provided was appropriate and the associated billing was appropriate as well under the circumstances. Again, he is present if you would like to ask him anything, realizing the limitations of the nature of the agenda item, but we appreciate the opportunity to be heard.
Okay, thank you. Do we have the complainant, patient with the initial DA? Are you present?
Yes, this is David Allen. It probably shows up as Dawson Allen.
So we're going to protect your identity by using initials only. We'd like to hear from you. This is Dr. Garino. I'm chairman of the board. I understand when I read through your complaint that you feel like some dates of services were charged that didn't happen. Is that correct?
Well, that is actually secondary. The primary concern is insurance fraud. He has billed the insurance company for days. I was not there.
Okay.
He has billed the insurance company different amounts at different points in time. He showed the patient balance different amounts, different times. Everything is all the billing records are different. From he sent a new bill in 2021 that totally was fictitious.
Okay. So this is on our agenda today as a weather to open, which means that we've received your complaint, but we don't have patient records and we don't have enough information to really make a decision on this other than to decide if we're going to open up a complaint and assign a case number to it and investigate it further. So I'm going to ask my board members if they have any other questions for you, and then we'll make that decision, okay?
Very good.
Okay. Ms. Powell?
No questions.
Okay. Mr. Turbinson?
No questions.
And Dr. Knopf.
Yes, this is Dr. Knopf for patient DA. Just so I'm clear on your complaint, your statement is that there was different billing issued between some visits, whether they occurred or not, and there was two different billings that were submitted. One, am I correct that the first set of billing submitted was for visit dates in 2019?
Yes.
And then when was the second bill resubmitted with the different levels of charges, the no charge on the visit dates. Do you know when that was resubmitted? Was that 2021?
May 2021.
Okay, so there was about a year and a half or so of some time in between those. Do you happen to know why the claim was the claims were resubmitted to insurance?
No, I kind of assumed he found out we did have a lawsuit in place, but because his attorney he referred to refused to take the case, and that's why some of the amounts are different. He provided us with a patient amount due in 2019, and he did show us the insurance amount if a case would take place. The lawyer refused the case. We paid the patient amount according to his statements in 2019.
Okay. And then was there another attorney that asked for these to be resubmitted, or what was I'm trying to understand what was the trigger for resubmitting them, and if it came from you or from one of your other attorneys, do you feel like that's what triggered that event?
No, we don't believe so. We believe May was actually before we heard anything from the insurance company that they actually reimbursed my wife, since Dr. Abrams did not have an account with him. So he fraudulently took our $20 copayment, billed insurance when he did not have any association with Arizona Blue Cross Blue Shield.
Okay, that's all the questions I have for patient DA. Thank you. Dr. Abrams, from your perspective, do you know why there was this year and a half in between when the claims were originally submitted versus when they were submitted again in 2021?
Yeah, so we never actually submitted the claims, the Blue Cross claims that he's referring to. We are part of the network, and my understanding is either him or his wife collected the full amount. They actually got more than what we billed. So the amount that he paid for his care that we settled on prior to him getting another attorney and not naming us on that lien, his wife actually collected a higher amount than what both of them paid for the care. So I'm really not sure what he's referring to because we didn't even do billing to the insurance company.
Okay. That's all the questions I have for now. Thank you.
I can't rebuttal it anymore.
Go ahead.
I can state that Dr. Abrams is false, that we received money exceeding his billing. We did not receive that amount. He actually got more than what we received from the insurance company.
Okay, so I have a question for Dr. Abrams. This is Dr. Guarino. So you're saying you're an in-network provider with Blue Cross Blue Shield and the checks went to the patient?
We never billed them because we were billing through we thought that the case was going to be able to go through another third party, an attorney, which we were told from David that he was going to bring another attorney in. The case was actually started because it was the accident happened on an Indian reservation. And so our attorney that we one of the attorneys we use, he says he's not up on the law well enough to be able to handle that type of case. So David found another attorney, which we never found out that he actually hired another attorney, but we were waiting. And in the interim, either him and or his wife actually billed the insurance company. And it wasn't even a Blue Cross. It was a different company. I'm not even sure. I have to look back at our record, but there's a different company involved with the insurance billing.
And I think without having seen the records myself, I think it appears that maybe there was a payment from perhaps someone's car insurance company, either MedPay or liability coverage that paid this. But Dr. Abrams did not submit billing to Blue Cross Blue Shield. He was essentially providing treatment on a lien because it was accident related, is my understanding of the situation. And until this issue arose recently, they were not aware that there was an attorney involved, and that essentially just had the account there. Again, I understand your information is limited, but I think use of the term payment by insurance, it might be a little confusing as to whether or not we're referring to health insurance, which Dr. Abrams is saying he wasn't billed, versus someone's medical payments coverage through their insurance, or an adverse driver's liability coverage. And as I think Dr. Abrams was trying to indicate, I'm guessing that the original attorney that he was attempting to refer the patient to was not licensed in tribal court, which is where they may have had to file the complaint. And there are very few tribal attorneys here in Arizona, so I don't know if that was the issue, but I think that may be what he was trying to indicate with respect to the issue with the first counsel.
Okay, Dr. Bennett.
Yes, thank you, Dr. Greeno. This is Dr. Bennett. Dr. Abrams, are you aware or are you in possession of any lien that was signed relative to this case?
I'd have to look back at a record. I don't know. It was 2 years okay. ago. But okay. normally our process is to get a lien.
Well, that's why I'm asking the question, because it sounds as if you proceeded along those lines that you began to provide care to the patient, and then for whatever reason, there was a switching of attorneys. Your presumption was that it was going to be on lien. Some other decisions were made. I'm trying to just determine if there ever was a lien filed just for MedLegal.
I don't believe there was another lien filed with another attorney, because we did not find out about that attorney.
Okay, thank you. All right, that answers that question. And DA, I have the same question for you. This is Dr. Bennett. Are you aware of any lien having been signed relative to this, to the injury related accident related injuries under question?
No, I do not believe so. We did not.
Okay, thank
our
you.
Our current attorney.
Right, you've answered my question. Thank you. Yeah, we're good. So I have no further questions. I would comment that there is a very significant billing and fee dispute associated with this, but unfortunately, there's also an allegation that care was provided that was not that was billed for and was not provided, or was not provided and billed for, and so for that reason, I think that we need to move forward and open a case here.
Okay, is that your motion?
It is my motion.
Is there a second?
I second.
Okay, Ms. Powell seconded. I'm going to call for the question. Those in favor of opening a complaint signify by saying aye.
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 Aye. Are there any opposed? Okay, we have five ayes that are going to that have moved to open up a complaint. That means we'll come back on another day and we will investigate this further, which means Dr. Abrams, you're going to get a request for records that you need to comply with, okay?
Sure.
And I will provide a formal letter of representation now that a complaint has been opened, and once that's sent to Dr. Abrams, so that I'm counsel of record officially for the matter. But thank you for letting me appear today and be heard.
All right, thank you.
Board members, I just wanted to clarify that was to open on the allegation of billing for services that they weren't provided.
Correct.
Okay, thank you.
Okay, let's move on to tab number five, also under whether to open with Dr. Dean Michelizio. Dr. Michelizio, are you present? And or are you represented by counsel?
Hi, yes, this is Sarah Stark. I'm counsel for Dr. Michelizio. He should be signing on as well.
Okay, thank you. Okay, Dr. Nayuri?
Yes, sir. So in the matter of Dr. Dean J. Michelizio, this is a whether to open, as you stated. Complaint was received from a patient who says that Dr. Dean, as he presents this as his last name, in order that you cannot look him up. His name only appears as Dr. Dean on the website. called you personally with the intent to mislead you into a weight loss treatment that he has already determined you will require more treatment after inflating the results of your first visit. So it's basically another complaint about the weight loss program and unnecessary medical emergency.
Okay, and Dr. Nayeri, do you have Dr. Michelizia was currently under on a probationary order, correct?
Correct.
Do we have the, can you refresh us as to the terms of the probation? Do you have that in front of you?
I do not. I'm going to defer to Deputy Director Vanderveen, who oversees the compliance.
Okay. So while we're looking that up, I'll ask my board members if they have any questions. Has Dr. Michelizia joined yet? Ms. Stark?
Dr. Michelizia, are you on? He indicated he was in the process of logging on. I just contacted him.
Okay. And you're officially representing him so we can speak for you?
Yes, that's correct.
Okay. So, Ms. Powell?
Shall I direct my questions to the doctor or the attorney?
To Ms. Stark.
Ms. Stark. Okay. His name appears as Dr. Dean on his website without any indication as to his credentials. Is that correct?
I believe that's correct, but he does have his license displayed in the facility. So there's obviously his first and last name available, and, you know, the complainant was obviously able to file this complaint. So I believe she was able to ascertain his last name.
Does he practice chiropractic? And a weight loss, the weight loss program is part of this chiropractic practice, same location?
Yes, that's correct. And I believe in the prior case, you know, this board went back and forth about whether the laser treatments that were being performed, you know, conformed to the practice of chiropractic under the statute. And I believe it was determined that this was considered the practice of chiropractic.
He makes the initial contact with the patient as a marketing strategy.
I'm not sure whether it's considered a marketing strategy, but yes, he does do the initial consult with the patient, evaluates the appropriateness of the treatment, and advises the patients on what they should expect from the treatment and any and all disclaimers that may be relevant. And then he's available throughout the course of the treatment, you know, if he's needed.
And is there a script that he uses when he talks to these patients? And where's the list of patients come from?
I am not sure about that, but I did just get a message that he is being he's waiting to be admitted to the meeting. So perhaps he can address that question
if he's able
to be connected at this point. Okay, he says he's on.
Hi, Dr. Michelizia. Can you introduce yourself for the record, please? If you are here, you are muted and we cannot hear you. Going twice for Dr. Michelizia.
Okay, here we go. Is that it? Is it on my end? Can
you hear me now? Hi.
Okay. Yep. Sorry. Hi, this is Dr. Dean Michelizia.
Hi. This is Dr. Guarino, Chairman of the Board, and Ms. Powell has some questions for you specifically regarding your role and this complaint that's been made against you, so she's going to ask you those questions now.
Doctor, two questions. One is you make the initial contact with the patient. These patients that you contact or potential patients, they come from a list that you obtain how?
No, there's advertising that's done. And they contact us, and I reach out to them after they've contacted us. We're not buying lists. They contact us.
Is there a script that you use when you're talking to these potential patients?
Well, it's not a script, but I've done it so many times that I've sold my office and we're going to replace me. And basically, I've done it so many times. I've done a text to document, and it comes out the same way each time. It's not a script, but it takes them through patient education.
I understand.
Yeah.
My last question. I said I had two. I actually have three. My last question, if the first visit is no charge, essentially, then why do you demand the patients make payment in advance if they decide to, before that you even do the initial treatment?
Because it's not a complimentary treatment, okay? They know when they call us, and they also know during the consult that the treatment's not free. They usually are responding to a new patient special that is either $1,500 or $2,000, and they know it. Okay, there's not even a question. All right, because first they're responding to an ad that says that. Okay, there's no debate or question. So when they're there, they basically pay before they get on the table, because we have had people basically rip us off.
So there's no question that the patient is not told or gets the impression that when they come in, they're not going to have to pay.
No, that is total. Usually during the consult, when we get towards the end, if I've qualified them as a candidate, I go, do you have any other questions? And they go, well, I'd like to know what it costs. And then I go over the cost. And I go over what the new patient special is versus if they need more, they may not need more. It's just a lot of it. Some of it depends on, you know, how well they take care of themselves, how good their results are going to be.
Do you ever turn a patient away?
Yes.
Or potential patient away?
Yes.
Okay. That's all my questions. Thank you.
Dr. Bennett.
Dr. Michelizio, hello again. It's Dr. Bennett.
Hi, Dr. Bennett. How are you today?
I'm good, thank you. So here we are kind of talking about the same stuff again, and it concerns me a little bit, I have to say, since you're still on probation for some stuff that was going on before. And during our last go-around, we determined, as your attorney acknowledged, that you agree that you've established a doctor-patient relationship when you enter into these weight loss arrangements.
Not a weight loss.
And are you practicing as a doctor of chiropractic when you see these, when you do this weight loss or not?
It's not about weight. This is not about weight loss. Okay. But I obviously am a chiropractor.
Okay. So apparently we're going to have to readdress this issue yet again. Actually, I have no further questions.
Okay. I think board staff now has a clarification on the probationary order that he's currently under the. Yeah.
So he's under a non-disciplinary order for continuing education. He was still required to take 3 hours of CE in chiropractic jurisprudence. And in lieu of, he took the jurisprudence exam because apparently there was some discussion about being able to find a course that was a three-hour course. So that's where we
are. So is his status currently probation, or was it just a non-disciplinary order?
It's a non-disciplinary order.
Okay. Thank you. Okay. All right. So part of the complaint says that there were measurements that were done kind of sloppily with a tape measure and maybe loosely done for the first time around. And then the second or subsequent time around, it was done tighter to say, wow, you've lost however many inches. Do you evaluate patients in that regard or train the person who handles that?
They're trained, and these techs do not, they don't practice like that. They're licensed professionals. They do not practice like that. This, I don't know who this person is because we don't have a name, but we can surmise. And if it's the person I think it is, she came in for her first treatment, left happy as a clam. She was thrilled with her results. The problem came was when, if it's the same person, and we don't know, okay, when she showed up for her second appointment way late, the esthetician could not take her because we had somebody right after it, and she rescheduled. But they know this because they signed paperwork. They put a credit card on file for same day cancels, and she was charged $50, and then she lost her mind. She went out of her mind when she showed up for her next appointment. She wasn't there to get treated. She was there for a fight. And she was borderline out of control.
Okay.
It's the same person.
Thank you. And I know we're guessing because it's an anonymous complaint right now. So I'm going to go ahead and call out to the complainant. If you are present, this is your chance to speak. Do we have the complainant present? Okay, going twice for the complainant. Okay. Any other board members have any questions before we decide what to do, to open a complaint or not? Okay. Hearing none. You know, the complicating factor is with an anonymous complaint, we can't request records and investigate this any further. So what's your pleasure?
Well, we, Mr. Chairman, I feel as though we should open a complaint with regard to misleading advertising. Is it within our purview legally, based on concerns, to ask for a general sampling of patient documents? Do we have that authority?
Mr. Monahan? Mr. Monahan, you're muted. There you go.
Sorry about that. Assistant Attorney General Seamus Monahan. Since this is currently, I believe, under a weather to open, I would say no, we need to open a case and bring it before the board and then subpoena any documents you may need.
Then I would seek a little bit of clarification. Again, this is potentially an executive session thing, but let me raise it in the public domain. Maybe we can get by it really quickly. So we have, you know, we have to have a reason, and the reason for opening would be misleading advertising pursuant to 32-924A513. But my concern and question is then within our purview after the fact, if we are suspicious or have very concern based upon previous issues and concern about a recurring behavior, to then bring forward other complaints at that time? Are we okay with that, or is that not an allowed practice?
Well, once the board begins its investigation, it can then any potential violations will then come out after the board's investigation at the initial review.
Okay, thank you. So, Mr. Mm-hmm. Chairman, I would move that we do open on the basis of misleading advertising as an allegation.
Okay, is there a second?
I'll second the
motion. Okay, Ms. Powell beat you to it with a second. You know, for discussion, I have the same concerns, but just based on past testimony, and I don't want to make the argument for him, but He's saying that he doesn't have a doctor-patient relationship with these people, and so how do we request records or a sampling of records on people that he's saying he's not treating? And I guess we can get into that on the day of, if you know, when we bring him back.
I agree with you, Mr. Chairman. I think it's a legitimate question, and I think the question needs to be answered. Okay. Because my perception is that there is a doctor-patient relationship, and if we establish that there is, then it is within our purview to request records.
Okay, I'll call for the question. You open the complaint. All those in favor signify by saying aye. Aye.
Aye.
Are there any opposed? Okay, Dr. Michelizio, Ms. Stark, the board is, we have just voted to open up a complaint, so we'll see you back in another day. You'll be notified in writing when that will be.
Thank you.
Thank you. Okay, let's move on to tab number 6 in our consent agreement tab in the matter of Dr. Stacy DeWolf. Dr. DeWolf, are you present?
I would not expect her to be here today, Board Chair.
Okay. Dr. Nayeri, can you catch us up?
Yes. So before you is a consent agreement that was signed and accepted, received by the board from Dr. Stacy DeWolf, surrendering her license and terms of a consent agreement laid therein. Stated by the Assistant Attorney General. The original complaint and allegations were improper billing, impersonating another practitioner, unprofessional conduct, failing to respond to board subpoena. And of course, there was Dr. DeWolf appeared before the board in November, and subsequent to that, she submitted her consent agreement that she executed.
Okay, so board members, you're looking at a consent agreement for a voluntary surrender of license. Do you think that it was written to your specifications? And if so, we need a motion to adopt the consent agreement.
This is Assistant Attorney General Seamus Monahan. Just for the board's information, it is basically just a recitation of the board's report of that day. So all allegations and all facts were included, and that is what she signed.
I agree. I move that we accept the consent agreement, Mr. Chairman.
Okay, is there a second?
Second motion.
Okay, do we need a roll call vote?
Yes,
do that.
So, Mr. Turbinson?
Aye.
Dr. Knopf?
Aye.
Ms. Powell?
Aye.
Dr. Bennett?
Aye.
And Chairman, Dr. Bennett?
Dr. Guarino,
aye. Dr. Guarino,
aye. Okay. So we have 5 ayes in favor of accepting the consent agreement, so the motion carries. And we'll go on now to tab number 7. Which is the matter of Dr. James Winberry, licensure. Hi, welcome. Have a seat. Please state your name into the microphone for our recorded audio record.
My name is James Michael Winberry.
Hi, welcome. Dr. Nayeri?
So before the board is the memo regarding Dr. Winberry's application, requesting renewal of his application. Dr. Winberry disclosed that he had voluntarily surrendered his license in Colorado back as of March 11, 2021. And the Colorado Department of Regulatory Agencies, DORA, requires 30 hours of continuing education over a 2-year period. Dr. Winberry said that based on his records, he had the required CE hours, and then Dr. Winberry stated that he claims that he signed a consent agreement to surrender his license without being aware of what he was signing at the time. And he did, in fact, have the continuing education, but as I read over the application and the information Dr. Winberry submitted, there was a question about the currency of his and validity of his the email and the record for Colorado, which he had not received the correspondence. And once he finally received the notice, he entered into that consent agreement with the Colorado board. But we don't have all of the report or the information has been provided by Dr. Winberry. We don't have the information on the actual investigation from the Colorado board.
Okay, thank you. Dr. Winberry.
Well, I did request the Colorado board send the information to you. I also applied to be a CE instructor too. So sitting here today, I don't remember if that request of them was made in relation to the CE request or the licensing request, but I suspect it was for the licensing request.
Okay, so do you have any written documentation confirming that you requested that information?
I'm sure I have it on an email.
Okay.
And can produce that.
Okay. Board members, any questions for Dr. Winberry?
Can I make a statement?
Oh, absolutely.
Go ahead. All right. Well, I'm very embarrassed to be here over this because it's a totally self-inflicted wound. But I'd like to tell you a little of the background about how I got to the point where this could possibly happen. I got involved in digital motion x-ray in 2011, and then I gave up one-on-one patient care in 2016 and was doing full-time motion x-ray in Tucson. But, you know, the grass is always greener. And I taught a seminar in Washington where I met a guy, didn't realize who he was, but he owned 7 or 8 clinics and was heavily involved in personal injury. And shortly after that, he called me on the phone and basically offered me a job. And so it looked like the job of my dreams. And so to make a long story short, I accepted a job in November of 2018. And by the beginning of December 2018, I had moved to Seattle and was expecting to get started with that. But it took about a week and a half for the job of my dreams to turn into a nightmare. And at that point, I'd given up my practice in Tucson and walked away and thought it was going to work out just great. But I decided at that point I was just going to hang on and receive a paycheck until it got very tense between us, and then I would leave. And that's exactly what happened. I basically became like an expensive piece of software that he bought and didn't know how to use. And so that's where I was with that. So in March of 2019, I moved back to Tucson. But at that point, my chiropractic spirit was crushed. I had a very bad experience, and I didn't want to go back into practice or doing what I was doing. So I had a friend who was my former pastor. He owned a place out in the Chiricahua foothills. I don't know if you know where that's at. It's close to the New Mexico border, but it's a beautiful place, and he uses it for Christian ministry. And I just needed a place to land on my 2 feet, so I went out there, and what was going to be a short time turned into be quite a while. But during that time, I knew I wasn't done, and I was looking for a way to get back in the game because I still had a digital motion x-ray machine. I always wanted to bring it up a notch by taking it into a medical diagnostic facility, because these types of machines tend to be in the back rooms of chiropractic offices, and there are lots of questions when you get into the medical legal field about how valid they really are, and that's what I've worked on. So I had collected a pile of articles and books, so while I was out there in the Chiricahuas doing mainly manual labor, I was breaking down all that stuff. And then I got an offer through a radiologist friend of mine at an upright MRI place in Centennial, Colorado. There was a chance we could get the machine put in there. That's where the application for the Colorado license came in. So I filled that stuff out. I looked at the hours, and this is where the stupidity comes in. I had the 30 hours. In fact, I had more than 30 hours, but I only submitted what I needed to. And I assumed, and I know what they say about people who assume things, that I had the continuing education hours there. I realize now that I didn't, but it didn't become apparent to me until I received a letter one day that said that I had already missed 2 email communications, and this was my final notice. And I saw that, and I got that feeling in the pit of my stomach, like, what have I done now? I got on the phone. I called DORA, and that's the Department of Regulatory Agencies in Colorado, excuse me, and asked them what we could do to remedy the situation. And first thing out of the whoever, I didn't get their name, but they told me that, well, we're looking at fines, sanctions. And I said, well, what kind of amounts are we talking about? Well, he threw out the amount, $5,000. I mean, I was living out in a shack in the Chiricahua foothills with no income, really, other than personal injury cases I'd been involved in before, which would come in every now and then. So the next thing out of my mouth was, well, you know, I mean, the thing with the MRI place had fallen through by then, and I'd completely given up thinking about moving out of Arizona back to Colorado. So I said, well, I said, I'm not going to use this license. I don't need it anymore. How about if I just return the license to you? Those were my words. He said, you mean relinquish your license? I said, yeah, relinquish my license. Yeah, how can we make that happen? He said, well, you'll receive a notice from us. So I didn't think it was going to be any big deal. I didn't realize at the time that the word relinquishment was a synonym for revoke or suspend. I mean, I realized what I should have done now was dealt with that board complaint and gone in front of them. But I don't know. It was pretty far along at that point anyway. So I think it was about the time. Well, several months after that, I received a notice from the National Practitioners Database that they had reported it to them. So I looked at that and that's when I decided I have to do something about this, because they only had record of 15 of the hours that I had submitted to the state of Colorado. See, many times when I put things through mail attachments on their websites, I usually have to call to find out if it actually got there. I know the stuff that I sent to Colorado originally didn't get there because I got an email requesting the certificate for my CPR. And I had taken that just before the deadline, and I knew I'd sent that in, but they didn't have it. So I gave it to them, but I didn't get the request for the other stuff. And then, I applied for to be a CE instructor to teach the motion X-ray material that I have. And I realized it was held up, and I never really received a response from the board on that because of this issue. It didn't occur to me that those same questions were on the licensure application until I decided about 6 weeks before the end of the year to go ahead and reapply for the license. And then I saw that stuff and thought, geez, what have I done to myself? I admit at this point that, you know, I did not have the hours, and I would submit to whatever penalty you would like to attach to that, whether it's probation or sanction or continuing education hours. You're not going to see me again here in front of this over the
seventh. So you're aware of if we did offer you a probationary, you know.
No, I'm not aware of anything, so you better explain it.
It'll be disciplinary if it is. You know, if we were to grant you a license with some type of probationary term, that would also be disciplinary. Are you saying you would be agreeable to that if the board decided to do that today?
Well, I'm sorry?
I asked you if you would be agreeable to, if we did grant you a license with a probationary term, that's one option. That would be a disciplinary action, but you would have a license. And I'm not saying the board's going to go in that direction, but mm-hmm. so you know that would
yes.
be disciplinary.
The answer is yes, I would agree to that.
Okay. All right. Board members, any questions? Ms. Powell?
Question for, does it have to be a disciplary
action? No, but you can't do probation without this.
But can we issue a license and say you have to take continuing education now 4 hours for whatever reason or whatever? Can we do that?
Mr. Monahan, I don't think so.
This is Assistant Attorney General Seamus Monahan. No, I do believe we might have discussed this before, but unless it was like an order for non-disciplinary education and renewing his license, you could do that, if you were willing to comply, if you're going to require him to do something, it needs to be a non-disciplinary order with his license, or there needs to be some kind of probationary term to ensure that he's required.
So we can do non-disciplinary requiring hours.
Yes, absolutely.
Well, I guess I'm confused by that because I thought that we really couldn't order that until he's under our purview and licensed. And so how do we order continuing ed for somebody who's not yet licensed?
Yeah. You would issue the license.
Point of clarification, this is on his renewal application, not a new license application.
Okay, so just for the renewal. Okay.
Yeah. And would just you would renew the license, and then your next motion would be to order the continuing education that he didn't finish.
Okay, so that's an option.
Yes.
Question, where are we with regard to hours, CE hours at this point in time?
I think you mean, I think Dr. Brewer satisfied the number of CE hours required for renewal for our
state.
For our state.
So he's current with regard to CEs?
Yes.
So if we were to order, require additional CE hours, it would be relative to some deficiency that we would perceive as a licensing board.
Perhaps.
I would assume we would have a reason for doing it, right?
And if I may, Chairman Greeno, Dr. Greeno, that, you know, the concern we have for, from the board staff perspective, from my perspective, is that it is your responsibility to notify any board by which you're licensed, Dr. Winbury, of your current contact information, including email. So when I read through the history of what you provided with your application, I recall you stating that, well, you had a number of different emails, and some of them were really a few years old, and you had never checked, and
there's never been a time when I haven't informed the board about that. What I was saying when I wrote that in my statement is that gee, which email address was I using at that time that the board was aware of?
So what I'm asking from our perspective, from my perspective, is I want to make sure that you're aware and that it's your responsibility to inform the board of your current contact information.
Right, I understand.
We don't have to. It's not our responsibility to be searching for what your current information is. So we don't want to get into the same issue with Colorado.
The board has the option to also issue the renewal. And, if you wanted to, just another option, you could put a note in the file in the form of an advisory letter that if this activity happens again, that the board will take disciplinary action. Just an option.
Okay. Dr. Knopf, any comments, questions?
No questions for me. Thank you.
And Mr. Turbinson?
No questions.
Okay. Board members, what's your pleasure?
Mr. Chairman, I move that we grant licensure in accordance with 32.921 and with all fees and presuming all fees and dues and monetary issues resolved.
Okay. Is there
a second?
I second the motion. Let's call a second. And any further discussion? Okay. Hearing none, I'm going to call for the question to grant licensure or renewal. Those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Are there any opposed? Okay, we have five ayes. You'll get your renewal. Thank you.
All right. Well, thank you. Can I make a statement? I didn't know when I came here today that new licensees were required to come to meetings like this.
Yeah.
I came here in March of 2002, and I wish that would have been a requirement then. Maybe I wouldn't have been here today.
Yeah. Great.
Thank you, Dr.
Okay.
Thank you.
All right. Let's move on. You know what? It's noon. 12:09. I think somebody probably needs a break. Let's do a quick 10-minute break, and we'll be back. Okay, do we have Mr. Turbinson back? Not quite. Oh, there he is.
Seamus.
Okay, great. Everybody's back. It is 1:12. We're back in open session. Or I'm sorry, it's 12:20. I keep looking at the date. It's only 12:20 p.m. Okay. Let's go on to tab number 8, Dr. Christopher Serafini for a preceptorship. Dr. Serafini, are you present?
He is present, Dr. Guarino.
Yes.
Good morning. I'm representing him. My name
I'm here. I am actually present. Sorry, guys.
And Dr. Serafini is present as well.
Okay. So, Mr. Cushing, you're representing Mr. Serafini, Dr. Serafini?
I am, doctor.
Okay. All right. Great. Dr. Nayiri, will you please give us a brief?
Sure. Dr. Christopher Serafini was basically requested a preceptorship, submitted a preceptorship application for approval, which was denied by the board. It was determined by the board staff that Dr. Serafini, Christopher Serafini, did not meet the requirements to be a preceptor. He answered yes to question, which states, have you ever been convicted of or pled guilty to or plead nolo contendere to a misdemeanor or felony, even if later the record of the conviction was sealed or expunged, or the conviction itself set aside or forgiven or entered into a stipulation or settlement agreement in lieu of such proceedings. And you're not required to disclose jurisdictions or adjudications that took place in juvenile court. And in response to that question, Dr. Serafini provided an email explaining that in March of 2004, he was charged with a DUI in Scottsdale, Arizona, and eventually pleaded guilty. Interim Executive Director Bohal wrote on the application checklist, not approved. Supervising chiropractor does not meet the requirements of AAC R4-7-1001. It's at E11, sections E11. Below is the statute that Director Bohal had referenced in the above denial. Article 10, preceptorship training program, R4-7-1001, eligibility application, and E, the board shall not approve participation for a preceptor who has been the subject of disciplinary sanction or conviction of a felony or a misdemeanor involving moral turpitude. Ms. Barmawart's preceptorship application and file, it did not appear to include a formal denial letter notifying her or Dr. Serafini of the reason for the denial. Included in the file was a sticky note and read 8-3 called and sent email, and 8-3 she called at 2:16. We'll try to find another preceptor.
Okay, thank you. All right, so Mr. Cushing, it appears that we have a statute that says that we shall not allow a preceptorship because of the circumstances. What do you say to that?
What we say to that is that this board did sanction Dr. Serafini back in 2005, arising out of the DUI, and he completed all of the requirements that were required under that findings of fact, conclusions of law, and order for letter of concern. And now we're here 17 years later. He has led an exemplary practice. He has 5-star ratings, extremely happy patients. He has done everything to redeem himself from that DUI. He takes it very seriously, and he did take the probation very seriously. And it does appear that the law permits the board, under similar circumstances, to deny the preceptorship. In those cases, the board is supposed to notify Dr. Serafini in writing the reasons therefore, and give him a pathway forward. Let him know what does he have to do to come into compliance so that he could act as a preceptor. So we sent the letter into the board in August asking for an explanation as to why he had been denied. We thought perhaps it was related to the DUI. We hoped, frankly, that it wasn't, since, again, that was 17 years ago. And we wonder how long does he have to serve this sentence from the DUI when he completed everything that he needed to complete back in 2005. So we're asking the board to both reconsider its decision on denying the preceptorship, or at least future preceptorships, but also asking the board to confirm its reasoning pursuant to the statute as to why he was denied and what he could do to come into compliance. He's here to answer any questions as well.
Okay, thank you very much. Mr. Monahan? Are you with us? Hi.
You're
yes.
muted.
Okay. So my understanding was that we did not have an option to give him a pathway forward because of the way that the law is written and that we shall not grant the preceptorship. Do you interpret that differently, that it's the board's responsibility to accommodate him, or how does this work?
Well, again, these are board decisions, but pursuant to the rules, the board shall not approve a precept. The participation for a preceptor has been the subject of disciplinary sanction or convicted of a felony or misdemeanor involving moral turpitude. And you know what that word shall means, so I don't know where there's any room for the board to obviously, I can't advise you not to follow your rules and statutes.
May I be heard on that, Doctor?
Yes. Go ahead, Mr. Cushing.
So I would note that under the Arizona Chiropractic Jurisprudence Law Book, specifically R4-7-1003, Section B indicates that even if he is denied, the board shall promptly notify the extern, the preceptor, and the college of the suspension, the reasons for the suspension, and the conditions under which the suspension may be lifted, if any. So it contemplates the idea that it might be denied, but then lifted. And that's what we're asking for here, is that we understand there may have been a basis to deny based on the 2004 DUI, but that now there's a basis to lift the suspension with 17 years of additional practice under Dr. Serafini's belt, and largely from everything we have before us, not only a model citizen, but a chiropractor that has a lot to offer the field and upcoming chiropractors as well, and who wants to be able to serve as a preceptor, has schools willing to send students to him. So we would ask that the suspension consider to be lifted.
Would the board like to go into executive session for legal advice here? I'm not going to have a legal argument on the open record.
Okay. I'm going to make a motion that we enter into executive session to get legal advice. Is there a second?
Second.
Okay. We got a second by Dr. Bennett, and the time is 12:29. PM. We are going to move into executive session in the next room. We'll be back shortly. Okay, the time is now 12:39. We're back in open session. Thank you for your patience. So at this point, I feel that we really don't have options because of the way that the rule is written. Any other board members want to weigh in on that?
Yes, Mr. Chairman. Dr. Serafini and Mr. Cushing, I know we all are, well, I can't speak for the board, but I'm sympathetic to this issue. I think it's a situation where we have, you know, the unintended consequences. In my opinion, the language of the statute should be modified, but it is not the purview of this board to change statute. And that would be what we would have to do to change our position on this, change our original position on the matter. And unfortunately, regretfully, for that reason, my recommendation is that we take no action on this matter.
Okay. And so is that your motion?
Yes, sir.
Okay. Is there a second?
I second the motion.
Okay, Ms. Powell, second. Any further discussion, board members? Okay, hearing that, I'll call for the question. Those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Aye.
And are there any opposed? Okay, So that concludes your tab for today and your hearing. Thank you for joining. And we're going to move on now to tab number 9.
Dr. Chair, with respect, may I just ask a point of clarification on the last decision?
So we have not done anything different. The denial stands. We've taken no action.
All right. Thank you, Doctor.
And Dr. Guarino, this is Assistant Attorney General Seamus Monahan. Would you or Dr. Bennett like to direct staff to look into any possible rule changes regarding this matter?
Yes. Thank you for that, Mr. Monahan. And yes, the upside of this is that there is a process that we are aware of where we can make rule change recommendations as part of our job as a board. And I believe that it would be appropriate for you to follow up on those with staff and add that to our agenda of items that we would like to address when the opportunity presents itself.
Okay. Thank you.
And tab number 9, we're foregoing that one.
Okay. Yeah, tab number 9 is vacated. So we're going to go on to tab number 10 for board business. We'll go through our board meeting minutes.
And just for clarification, board members, Assistant Attorney General Seamus Monahan, item 9 will be on the next meeting for formal hearing.
Okay.
I didn't hear what you said. You'll what?
Item 9 will be on the next meeting as a formal hearing.
Okay. Okay. So let's go through our executive session meeting minutes first for December 8th, 2021. And we're looking at one page. Are there any changes? Corrections?
Please, just a moment, Mr. Chairman, because as I recall, when I read through those, there was one small error. Never mind. It's not that important. It was a misspelled word or something. It's not important.
Was it my name again?
Actually, I do have it.
So because it was executive session, be sensitive to how you make the correction.
Just say the word.
Actually, I'm failing. I have something highlighted that is not an error. I withdraw all comments associated with that.
Okay. Oh, kudos so to me.
Okay, Ms. Powell. Second. There's a second by Dr. Bennett. All those in favor of accepting the meeting minutes as written, signify by saying aye.
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 Are there any opposed? Okay, we have 5 ayes for that. And let's move to the open session minutes for the same day. And we will go page by page. Okay, I've got it pulled up. I'm looking at page 1. And I have Dr. Knopf spelled with 2 F's.
Oh, okay.
On line 26.
Got it.
Okay, page 2.
Line 11, there should be a space between members and questions.
Okay. There also, it says Dr. Wolf, and I think all those should be changed to Dr. DeWolf.
Oh, yep.
Okay, how about page 3? Page 4? Got
yeah,
it.
There's
Dr.
A,
Knopf with 2 up.
You got it. Okay.
At the bottom, line 28.
Got it. You can tell where I cut and paste this.
Okay, page 5. Page 6. Okay. Is there a move to approve as corrected?
So moved.
Okay. Second. First by Bennett, second by Powell. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
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 Any opposed? Okay. Motion carries. Let's go on to tab number 11, our executive director's report.
Okay. Thank you, Dr. Guarino. So for our budget, I'm happy to report that, you know, you probably have not seen this before, right? Where we start with the appropriations at 469,000, and we are now up to, our total is 492. So that's really due to, I was going to say, it's credit to the team and how we're managing our budget, but it's also in reality because we're behind on catching up with some of the expenses due to vacancies that we had before and the savings that we had before. So our total revenue was, as of month of November, our last financial reports are $54,879, and our total expenditures were $31,674. With our beginning appropriations in November at $83,752, and our ending appropriations for October, month of October, I'm emphasizing that, was $52,078. Any questions about the budget? Hearing none. As far as our renewals, there's been, I understand that there's been some questions and concerns from our applicants in terms of our renewal process. But I would first of all like to preface my report is to share with you that we received about 74 to 75% of our license renewal applications in December. So that bottlenecks the whole process. The staff has, you know, my team has been really working overtime. You know, they have been demonstrating their dedication. They're working hard to process and push those out. However, we are, you know, the obstacles that we experience are IT related. We can obviously, based on our intergovernmental service agreement, we can seek help and assistance from our sister board, and we have provided this hardware platform for them to help us out. So for example, in order to get the software access license that we need for each of those people to help us out, it would cost us $750 per license. And that's an IT and Microsoft related thing that we have no control. The other obstacle has been having adequate access to the program, the software access, which we use currently for our license processing. And one person can have access to that, that bottleneck is at first. So until the such time when we are fully automated and we dispense with this antiquated dinosaur of a system that we are using manually process the application. I apologize, but that's how as fast as we can turn them out is how you see with our application. We received, in December, we received 1,406 applications. And we processed 379 in December. And for January, so far, there were 270 renewals. And the total renewal received to date are 2,151. So the renewals remaining to be processed are 1,300. So we have nearly processed about half of them, at least 48% of them. Current date processing is December 7th. So we're up to December 7th for processing renewals. And so mail these renewals. That we began the process for as of 1/11 is or January 11th zero, and there are three deficiencies with the renewal. And if Andrew, feel free to jump in if you think that I don't want to misspeak or provide false information, but. The licenses that were issued in December were, again, new licenses, that is, were zero. The total license applications that we received in December were 10. And the applications received in January up to January 11th, we had a total of 1. The other matter that I would like to share with you is that we do have our sunset hearing tomorrow, scheduled for tomorrow at the joint Senate and House Health and Human Services Committee. So I understand both Dr. Torino and Dr. Bennett will be joining us and will be there. Deputy Director Van Der Veen is officially the registered lobbyist for the board, per my request and recommendation. So
I apologize, Dr. Neri. I'm having a hard time hearing you over the computer.
Okay. So
there we go.
I was hearing, what part did you not hear, Doctor? Mr. Monahan.
It was just the last.
The doctor, curious doctors, right?
It's the last, just like the last 20 seconds. You don't have to repeat it for me. That's fine. I just wanted
so
you to know. It's kind of hard.
What I said was basically that we, for the sake of interest of Doctors Knopf and Mr. Turbinson also, we are really doing well in terms of processing the applications. We have processed renewals, about 48% of renewals. So of the over 2,000 applications we received, we have processed over 1,300 of them. And the last thing I shared was that we are scheduled for our sunset hearing for the board before the joint Senate and House Health and Human Services Committee tomorrow morning at 9:30 at the Capitol. And
good
Doctors Guarino and Doctors Bennett will be joining us for that. And the last thing I shared was that Deputy Director Van Der Veen is the registered lobbyist for the board at no cost, at no extra cost, I should disclose. So thank you. Any questions?
I have a question. So I think there's this perception out there that when a licensee fills out the form and pays their fees, that they think that instantaneously that there's some kind of computer software that's going to approve their license and make it happen. Can you explain the process of how every application renewal has to be physically handled?
Yes, I'll be happy to. And Mr. Dominic, as licensing manager, chime in. But once the board receives an application, we check to make sure that the application is complete, whether we will check for all the questions on there to make sure there are no red flags. The continuing education hours need to be submitted. The if there is fingerprinting and background check that goes to FBI, we need to receive those reports back from the Department of Public Safety. And there needs to be appropriate fees paid for the license renewal. In the case of a new license, one of the reasons I appreciate you asking that because it triggered another piece of information. The reason we have not, for example, processed as many new applications is because we are waiting for the reports, the fingerprinting reports from DPS. FBI and DPS are behind on processing those fingerprinting reports. Therefore, we cannot complete our application process until we receive those.
And Babbage, Dr. Neri, it's my understanding that it's taking up to 10 to 11 weeks to get those confirmations back?
That's correct. At least. So, and we are not the only board who is having that challenge. All other boards are experiencing the same challenge. It's a matter of FBI and DPS getting those reports back to us. So, until such time when we Well, let me go back to make sure I completely respond to your question, Dr. Guarino. So we receive the applications, we review everything submitted to us. Our licensing manager reviews it. If there are any questions, it's brought to my attention, and then I review it, and we follow up with the applicant in terms of any deficiencies. And should there, you know, in a case where there is everything is complete, it doesn't take that long for us to prove them. But when there are deficiencies, then that's what takes time, in addition to what I already alluded to in terms of our system-related challenges with the bottlenecking and our software issues. So currently, for those who are in attendance online and as new licensees, it takes time for us to process these applications because we are handling them manually. There is no automation at this time. And the other challenge that we have is that we are receiving by statutes and according to our rules, we receive all applications before the end of the year in December. So that bottlenecks everything. So until such time when we are successful in changing the rules and changing the manner by which we receive applications, this is going to be the challenge. Now, the question that wasn't asked of me, if I may address it, because it has been brought to my attention that there are concerns. Those of you who are, or those applicants who are renewing their license and are awaiting their licensure in order to be credentialed as a provider for by different third-party payers, the certificate that's issued once you submit an application and your payment should suffice and should be adequate enough. Now, they should not hold you responsible as long as there are no red flags or no deficiencies. They shouldn't really hold you accountable for not submitting a ornamental or certificate or license. So we are aware of the deficiencies in our system or inefficiencies, I think is a better description. We are planning as part of our strategy to introduce a new way of licensing. You know, one idea, not to hold me or any of my team to it, but is to that we have been researching based on and learning from the experience of other sister boards, agencies, to renew by birth months, not birth dates, because birth dates would, you know, a lot of people, many people may have the same birth date, so that would bottleneck things too. And another option that has been considered was going based on the year or the time, the date that license application was submitted and issued. But that poses a problem because many, as you know, many of the chiropractic colleges graduate their students in the same month, and then we get a bottleneck because there's suddenly a rush or high traffic due to those applications. So currently the most, again, that it may change, so it's not a hard set strategy, but currently the idea we are toying with and considering would be to go by birth month. And possibly, you know, doing multi-year renewals so that we don't have the congestion that we are experiencing. But those are all things that need to, are subject to rule change and statutory considerations by the legislation. Any questions?
I have a comment.
Yes, sir.
Four comments. Number one, it's refreshing to get the facts. I want to go on record as saying I like getting the fact of these are the numbers, this is what we're dealing with, because those are things you can deal with in terms of reality. And when we are communicating with people who are in our profession and who are reaching out to us, we're armed with that information. And so I want to, number one, highlight that. I like getting those facts. Number two, we're all aware of the challenges that this board has gone through with a very significant, almost a complete staff turnover at a time when we have all of this bottleneck going on and the technical deficiencies, and I just want to commend everybody for that. From our perspective, I think you guys have done a great job. Really support you. Which brings me to a third point, and that is that as board members, it's our job to support the process. And when we are approached by our colleagues who are expressing their frustration in various ways, it's our job to say, look, these are the facts, and we can, you know, support the endeavors of the board. And finally, I am personally aware of the options that you've just described. I've looked at, you know, based upon the information you've given to me, Dr. Nayeri, and I really encourage you and want to be on record as supporting those efforts. I think that that in the long run, when we look at long-term solutions, the options that you're considering that have been adopted by sister boards are viable options, and I just want to encourage that.
Thank you, Dr. Guarino. And the credit is due to the team. We have an amazing team. Everyone who's in this room, Ms. Belducia included, who's sitting by the entrance. So the credit is due to all of you. Thank you for your dedication. I think they're doing a phenomenal job. So they make me look good. But it's really them. Thank you.
Well, and I'm wondering, you know, how do we, you know, for anybody who requires a license to maybe get a second certificate, or who it's really important to, the message to them is renew in early December or late November for now, or whenever the earliest you can do it, instead of waiting until the last minute and saying, why don't I have it, right? So how do we publish that? I mean, we can put it on a website. You know, I'm just thinking out loud. You know, if people understood the process, maybe they would start earlier instead of waiting until the last minute. Not everybody. There's a whole bunch of people that are going to wait until the last minute or do it at 12:31, you know, and wonder why their continuing education went into January and now it didn't work for the previous year. That's always going to be there. But for the people that it's important to, if they knew the process, they maybe would renew earlier and take the burden off the staff in the event that we don't get anything changed in the next year. I hope we do, as far as law changes or renewal process. My only other thought around that is, you know, for as long as I've been on the board, we've been talking about these multiple databases and some of the logistical challenges of what the state requires us to use, and then how do we get into new contracts and change the way that we make these databases talk to each other, and how expensive is that? And, you know, maybe when we get into our occasional license renewal fee discussions, and should we bump it another $25 or whatever it is, this is where the discussion needs to go. We need more manpower to handle these, you know, renewals in a timely way and support the board to do the job, so that it's not all dumped on everybody during the holidays. So thanks again for all the hard work you've done. And then to that point, you're telling me on one hand that we have trouble with our databases and that slows the process down. Are you confident in the same breath that if we change to a renewal birth month process, that we're going to have software that's going to flag everybody's birth month and say it's time for renewal? Is it that easy to do right now? Or do we just know it's the end of the year and everybody's got to renew right now? Like, are we going to be able to notice everybody or not notice them, but track them and put them on administrative suspension when the end of January is over and my license was due?
So you have, Dr. Green, you have a team chime in. You have brought up several points. First of all, let me backtrack and respond to one of the points you made. There are those applicants, but four or five of them, who waited till actually the December 27th and December 29th to submit their application. Well, that, you know, you can't expect with the holidays and everything for that to be turned around right away. So to your point, those of you who are new and you're joining us to get CE credits online, submit your applications early. We start sending postcards and notices as early as October, encouraging people to submit their application. But do they do that? No. You know, I'm a professional. I have credentials. I have to submit renewals. I don't wait till the last minute. I do it 2-3 months earlier. And I don't think there are any boards or credentialing bodies that will say, oh, no, 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 you can't submit your application early. To your other point, Dr. Guarino, if we use the current software but change our rules and how we process renewal, we're going to have the same issues, most likely. So the ideal strategy would be to have automation using some platforms that we have looked into. One's called Sentia, and that's what we are currently courting to get more information and look at, and also monitoring to see how other boards are experiencing with that. Deputy Vanderveen has been talking with them. The cost has been considered. To my knowledge, there was some monies that were earmarked, and we had talked. I had talked with accounting to make sure that those monies, about $50,000, is earmarked for that purpose. It's going to cost us at least that much. What they do is they charge a fee per licensee. So, and there are no additional software license costs or update costs, because many of these software companies do that. So what we need to do, it's going to take about 3 to 4 months to migrate our data from, you know, hard copies to a digital electronic into that platform. Once we iron out all the kinks, and we couldn't do that, I wish we had that initiated this before this renewal season, and we're going to implement this initiative. However, we had to wait until we process all the applicants for 2021-2022 cycle before we can do that, because we did not want to have any more glitches by introducing a new platform. But we will do that. It's going to take 3 to 4 months. Once that's on board, our wrinkles are ironed out. We should be in a better shape next year. Now, as far as rule changes, legislation is about a year ahead. So it may not happen. I would love to see that happen this year. It's a bold, audacious expectation, but perhaps for 2023, the renewal and multi-year renewals and rules can be changed.
Can I just interject? So the previous board I worked for obviously does renewals based on issue date with a 2-year renewal period. With that, you see some of the same backlog that we see, which is everybody waits till the end of the month, but you've paced it out over a 2-year period. So maybe you're dealing with 35 a month versus 1500 in December. So you will still always have, I think you need to come into that expectation that you will have that backlog that occurs toward the end of the month, because everybody waits till the last day to renew. So there's always that issue. In terms of being able to manage it, even if we maintain the current access database, you can build those tables in such a way to pull by issue date, to pull by birth date, however we choose to do that. You can build that within that. I would hope that by the time the legislation passes, we've already moved on to the new database, where it will be more automatic. It will notify you automatically. You will have a portal where you will be responsible to enter and maintain your information, which would take some of that workload off the staff. So those things, and I think you have to also factor into the timing of processing these renewals. We have to touch every single one of those applications. And in addition to not just verifying your CEs and your questions, every time you change your address, that's the only time that possibly we've heard from somebody. So that we've got to go in and update that information in the database as well. So we're keying all that information and all those address changes, email address changes. And it's a time-consuming process because it's a three-part system. It's over here, it's over here, and it's over here. So it's pulling it all together to make sure we have the most accurate representation of what we've received.
Thank you.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. I mean, this is maybe just way out there, but could we do like an early bird pricing for license renewal to get some of these in sooner? Just something that I don't know. Think about.
Do we incentivize it? You mean?
Well, I think you incentivize it by saying if it's late, it's $200 late fee.
Yeah. Yeah, because we can't, you know, we couldn't give people discounts. You know, we're talking about rules and statutes changes. I don't think we can propose that we're going to give people discounts for early submittals, but we can certainly impose fees if they're late, as Ms. Vanderveen mentioned. So
yeah, I suppose the get-out-of-jail-free pass is out of the question.
Well, hopefully nobody will be in jail. Yeah, because then that poses a disciplinary issue.
I was just joking.
You know, I understand. And I'm using that as a segue to say, you know, I'm also proud of how the team is processing some of the backlog of complaints and moving them forward, as you have experience, you know, first-hand knowledge and experience of, especially through these hearings the last few months. We have, you know, we have some old cases that really get complicated. And again, thanks to the team.
Does that conclude your report?
Yes, sir.
Okay. I'm going to call to the public. This is the time for anybody online to say whatever they want to say. You can unmute yourself. We just can't respond to what you say, so it's not meant to be a two-way dialogue. And so now is your chance. Going once? Going twice? Okay. Hearing none, the time is 1:13. This meeting is adjourned.